Tonight on The Download, WGN Chicago Bears insider Adam Hoge, Chicago Magazine's Mark Caro, and live in Studio 435, hip-hop MC FemDot. Now, here's your host, a man who would like a new indoor scarf for Christmas, Justin Kaufman.
Specifically indoor. The outdoor scarves, that's for the unwashed. I need an indoor scarf like Sting. You know, something that's just kind of dangly, maybe a little stringy. Something that you know that I'm drinking a latte while I'm wearing it. Even if I don't have the cup, you know this guy just had a latte. I think that would be a good look for me. Like a really long one, too, that almost just kind of touches the floor as I walk. I don't know. I feel like that could be a look. I could be a trendsetter. A new look for Kaufman. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a great show lined up tonight. It's great to be back. We got a great month of December lined up. You know, the last the week after Thanksgiving, just with Blackhawks games and Northwestern football, we got into a little bit of a jam where we only had one show last week. But we are back this week with a vengeance. We have so many great guests. I'll go through it tonight and tell you who's coming up in the next month. But it's amazing. Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman's on this month. We're going to talk with him about playing Winston Churchill. How cool is that? Lots to do. And tonight's no different. First, we'll do Touche coming up here at 7:30 with Dave Lunding and Chris Veronis. Talk about taxes. We'll talk about Russia. We'll talk about Roy Moore in Alabama. Lots to discuss. Lots to argue. We'll let Dave and Chris do the heavy lifting. I'll sit back. Have myself one of those lattes. Look online for, what kind of scarves are available? Something really colorful. Or maybe something drab. All right, coming up at 8 o'clock, the Monday evening quarterback, the Chicago Bears. Was that the worst game of John Fox's career in Chicago? You can point to a lot of them. The loss in Green Bay earlier in the year, that was ridiculous. The blowout loss. But this one stung because the Bears are a better team than the San Francisco 49ers, but they did not play like it. Today, the Giants fired their head coach, general manager, but the Chicago Bears stayed pat, did not fire John Fox or anybody involved with the coaching staff after the team fell to 3-9. 3-9. Adam Hoge will join us. You can join us as well. 312-981-7200. That's coming at 8 o'clock. Mark Caro joins us at 9 o'clock. Mark fills in for the download when I'm out. Him and Chris Jones do a great job. We'll talk about his article in Chicago Magazine about data mining for the culinary industry. This is for Industry Night. We'll do tonight. We'll talk about restaurants that have a profile on you before you walk in the door. Now, that could be great. They know what you like, what you don't like, what you ordered before, who you are. So if you're a big shot, they treat you like a big shot. But is it too much for a dining experience, especially when, and this was brought up in the article, really great, interesting point. What if it has a financial profile and says that Pete Zimmerman can only afford this much? So you know what? Put Pete on the table all the way in the back facing the bathroom because he doesn't have enough money for us to even make it worth our while. Is that next? And we're at the point where they're prejudging us almost right out of L.A. Story. If you remember when Steve Martin had to go in before and argue with Patrick Stewart, he can have the duck. Well, what if my wife wants a duck?
I always find it weird when you get Grubhub or DoorDash or one of these order out things where it comes up as like, hey, you want this same order again? And then you look at it and you're like, boy, was I a disgusting pig this last time. It's like depressing me.
And that's part of it, too. You're like, you can't go anywhere without having your old order haunt you.
Yeah, I was like, no, I don't want to see. That was a bad day.
It was a bad day. There's a lot going on in my life. Bears lost.
I'm doing a lot better today.
I needed those two double cheeseburgers. And also tonight, Studio 435, FemDot, the hip-hop star here in Chicago. He came in earlier this summer before he did the Red Bull Sound Select show at Metro. And I love the kid, 21 years old. At the time, I think he's 22 now. And DePaul University student, he will perform live in Studio 435. All that coming up tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. Wow. The president has been busy on Twitter after last week's tax vote and the news that former NSA Director Michael Flynn took a plea deal and today's endorsement of Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore. The president is doing his best to dominate the news cycle. He's the Taylor Swift of politics. I mean, I can't go anywhere on social media. Facebook's quoting me tax law. Twitter's telling me to connect the dots on Russia. Snapchat, well, Snapchat's just putting cartoon dog ears in your friend, but still, probably a subtle political jab with the dog nose as well. Listen, Trump came in vowing to shake things up in Washington. Observers may have misunderstood. They thought that meant congressional gridlock, corruption, and government waste. You know, drain the swamp. But what if the real shakeup was decorum, respect, and the expectations of what it means to be presidential? It's pretty obvious when the media points all the foibles about how Trump acts on social media or in press conferences or with foreign leaders. But what if that's the point? What if the point was to hire a CEO to give tax breaks to corporations and a president to get rid of the pomp and circumstance and elite traditions that have been expected on Capitol Hill? Also, we seem to forget that our president, he really doesn't like regulation. He's been pretty upfront about that. How could he? He's a real estate mogul. Regulations are the pesky rules that get in the way of making more money. So think about it. Financial regulations, consumer protections, the EPA, and of course, the FBI, the ultimate regulator. To Trump, the FBI is the same as the SEC questioning his trading or the home inspector who makes him put sprinklers in his high-rises. Just a body of government that's being unfair to him and his business, administration. So if you think about it in those terms, Trump is a very productive president. But being allowed to pass gas at the dinner table doesn't necessarily make you a great president. And that's been The Download's real talk. Yeah? I feel like I got real 10 o'clock news right there. And that's one more thing. A protest against the tax plan just wrapped up on LaSalle Street. Politicians and protesters bemoaned the proposed changes, of course. They blocked loop traffic and messed up rush hour, which I think is now a deduction in the new plan. Yep, $250 for every time your commute was affected by protests. So that's good. In shocking Cook County Board politics news, Todd Stroger won't besmirch the Stroger name by running for board president against Tony Preckwinkle, as he said he was going to. Was he not serious, or did he have too much name recognition? So when petitioners were standing in front of the target saying, "Would you sign a petition for Todd Stroger?" "No, no, get off the premises. You don't belong here." Facebook is going to introduce a new 13 and under messengering app so kids could talk to kids. Ah, looks like the first users popped up. Roll Tide Roy. Yeah. His profile loves signing yearbooks and hates hanging at the mall. That was pretty good. That's like Seth Meyers caliber, don't you think? I kind of nailed that one. I feel like that's one that you'd see on a Jimmy Kimmel. Everyone, oh, they grow and the whole thing. I'm working here. I'm working. In weather, well, our 60-degree run's about to end. The storms are coming through, and when they're gone, wow, mid-30s. That's what I guess the weather's like on Jupiter, right? 30-degree swings in the matter of a fortnight. In sports, it's not every day that as football fans, we cheer against our own favorite franchise for a former kicker. But that's what all of Chicago did yesterday as we were watching our hapless Bears get beat by Robbie Gould. And we were okay with it. Just because the management at Hallis Hall didn't recognize how much we liked having a good kicker on the roster. C'est la vie. Good for Robbie. You literally kicked the crap out of the Bears. Literally. The Bears lost to the 49ers at Soldier Field yesterday, dropping a 2-5 at home this year. John Fox is still employed after another uninspired performance from his team and his coaching staff. Fox had a chance to let the 49ers score and play for the win, but instead felt good about blocking a 24-yard field goal at the end of the game. Felt good about the block. Going to go down as one of the dumbest things said in NFL coaching history. That sounds like a guy who's worried about the traffic on the way home getting out of Soldier Field. You know what? Let's speed this up. He is now the worst coach in the NFL by numbers. Like, technically, by record, he is the worst coach winning percentage-wise in the whole entire NFL. The Bears' defense didn't give up a TD, but also, they were not good. I mean, they gave up an exhausting drive at the end of the game to essentially lose it. and this offense took another step in the wrong direction with under 100 yards passing and under 50 yards rushing against one of the worst defenses in football. Tariq Cohen did okay. Nice little TD for the ESPN. Finally got an ESPN. Thanks, Tariq Cohen. Otherwise, we're the game they skip. Never makes it to the ESPN Sunday night where you're watching like, oh, they're going to do one of these cool. Now they're down. Watch this play. Nope. They skip over the Bears 49ers. The Bears are now 3-9 with a big showdown with the Browns on Christmas Eve to see who truly is the worst team in the league. Oh, that's going to be a good one. The New York Giants lost yesterday, and their coach was fired today. So, .. Also, the Packers won with Hundley throwing for less than 100 yards, and the Vikings are now the best team in the NFC. So dumb. The Northwestern Wildcats football squad will play Kentucky in the Music City Bowl in Nashville on December 29th. Lots of fiddles and hot chicken with your Cats football this holiday season. Notre Dame gets a rematch with LSU in the New Year's Day Citrus Bowl. And NIU plays Duke in the Quick Lane Bowl day after Christmas. Quick Lane Bowl. That sounds like when you put the bumpers up when you bowl. Quick Lane. Baseball news, the Sox signed former Cub catcher Wellington Castillo to kick off free agency. Love that move. Was good in Baltimore with 20 homers last year. Total upgrade. A for the White Sox. Yay! Nothing for the Cubs yet, although they're one of the finalists for Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese pitching phenom, who's also a hitting phenom. Wow, 23 years old. It's going to cost a ton of money, but the Cubs, still in it. And in NBA news, Derrick Rose reported back to the Cavs. He's not quitting just yet. So there you go. Bulls, Cavs, right now at the United Center. And finally tonight, a Chicago Tribune reporter got carjacked outside the Dunkin' Donuts at 31st and Halsted in Bridgeport. It wasn't violent, but still, it was a loaner car. Wait, the Malibus? The Malibus in the lot behind us here that we see every night? I've been in one of those. That car can't be worth the crime, right? If that's the case, I'm taking my 2005 Honda CR-V down to Bridgeport tonight. I got a taste for a caramel, Oreo, orange juice, mocha latte. I'll just keep it running in the parking lot while I hop inside. Have at it. Have at it. Anybody? No? Nobody? That's the carryout for December 4th, 2017. Tomorrow's going to get cold again, so make sure to come by tonight and help us get rid of all this sherbet. A terrible idea. All this sherbet. Coming up, Dave Lundy and Chris Veronis, Touche! And then Adam Hogue's going to join us. We'll break down the Bears' loss to the San Francisco 49ers. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, man?
Not too bad, my friend. I heard you talking about your Honda CR-V and how you'd leave the keys in it.
Yeah.
When I had a 1980 blue Plymouth Volare station wagon in high school and we'd come down to Blackhawks games, I would leave the doors open, but there were no takers.
No takers. I feel like that would help me at least in the decision of having to get a new car, you know? Just to do it for me.
Well,
nonviolent.
It would push you, takeover. It would push you in the right direction.
Right. Force me to do something with it. With not just my car, but my life.
Did you have a good weekend?
I did, man. Good. I did. I'll talk about it coming to 9 o'clock hour.
Sounds good.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right. It's time for Touché, and this is a big one tonight. Dave Lundy and Chris Veronis in studio. Chris in for Chris Roebling. I gotta say, I'm ready for this round, guys. I actually was lobbying Ro to keep his bell so we could start it like a boxing round. There's a lot going on. I don't even know where to start. You've got taxes, Roy Moore. You've got Russia. You got the travel ban stuff tonight. I mean, it seems over and over. There's just every single 5-10 minutes a story comes out. What's our first topic, guys?
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is the slowest news day ever, ever. Nothing's happening.
What do you make of what's happening? I mean, because this is, we get to a point where a lot of it is noise. There's white noise around us. And these stories have had ups and downs, and there has been narratives to them. But it does feel like this weekend and today, in effect, have just been overdrive, Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, look, There are a lot of stories out there, but to me the most important one is taxes, because taxes is the story that's going to affect pretty much every American man, woman, and child, is this abomination of a bill that they rushed through last Friday night. The bill was rushed through so quickly that they, I just read this this afternoon, they didn't realize that they inadvertently eliminated every corporate tax deduction because they set the corporate tax rate at 20% and the alternative minimum tax rate at 20%. And they screwed it up. Yeah. And there's a question, did they screw it up because you couldn't have passed it otherwise because of the reconciliation rules? Or was it, I mean, this is so bad. I was talking to a conservative Republican friend of mine in New York who voted for Donald Trump. It's my best friend who voted for Donald Trump. And yes, he's still my best friend. But he said to me, he said, this bill is going to kill me. He doesn't know if he's going to be able to pay for college for his kid because of the changes in the rules and how it penalizes the blue states.
Chris, I mean, it's a legislative win. And it's what Donald Trump ran on, the idea of changing tax or at least tax reform. Is this a good thing?
Is that it, Dave?
I could talk about the medical expense deduction that's going to kill people.
Talk about how the bill calls for the drinking of the blood of virgins who Roy Moore hasn't molested yet.
Well, we haven't gotten a chance to read the whole bill yet, so maybe it does.
Look, this bill is good. It's not perfect. It's getting better. I remember 2 weeks ago we were on here and Dave was beating his chest on behalf of all small business owners. This is bad for small business owners. Well, now the NFIB supports the bill. Look, if you add marginally employed, underemployed, and discouraged employed, you get an effective unemployment rate of 7.9%. There are jobs to be created out there, okay? So this capital formation, which quite frankly has not happened since the 90s, is going to have a stimulative effect. Even if it does result in stock buybacks or dividends, that's money in the pockets of investors they can reinvest. Or like you, Dave, a Democrat who is a big believer in demand-side economics, they could buy a car that they could add to the economy. So this bill, and look, there are a lot of shenanigans that go on in Congress. I agree with you 100%.
Like the 6,426 lobbyists who wrote this bill.
100% agree with you. And you know what? It's not over. It's going to conference.
That's right.
I remember, though, I seem to remember back in Obamacare, there was something called the Cornhusker kickback. It was just absurd. So, you know, these shenanigans aren't exclusive to Republicans. Both sides.
Well, I have a question about that, because I've heard over and over, and you've both parties are pointing the finger at the other. You saw the president today on Twitter saying that Democrats, you know, reason that he's endorsing Roy Moore is you could see the Democrats didn't even get involved in this process. They will say they weren't allowed to be involved in this process, reconciliation and what have you. And everyone points back to what happened with the Health Care Act. I mean, are we at a point where we're never going to get out of this cycle of each party? It's time that they're in power. They're going to try and do the same thing and change the way that we govern in our country.
I say this as a Republican and a conservative with, you know, my guys who are in power. It is not a good thing for democracy for these straight party line votes on big ticket items like tax reform, health care, whatever. It's not a good thing.
Then you should oppose this thing because there wasn't a single hearing.
There wasn't a single hearing in Congress on this redistricting bill. I'll give you that, brother Lundy.
Thank you.
I'll give you that. So we're in a hyper-partisan environment. Unfortunately, a commander-in-chief who dials it to 11 doesn't help. You know, all I could say, it's not over. Democrats have a chance to bring some ideas to the table. Trump would love to add Democrats.
Tell that to Joe Manchin.
A win for him.
Tell that to Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin is, as he himself said, the most bipartisan guy in the entire Congress. He said, I wanted to be part of this bill. They did everything they could to prevent me from being part of this legislation.
You better wake up and smell the coffee, because Trump won his state by like more than 30 points.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, as more comes out about the bill, and it is hard. I'll be the first to say that it becomes a lot of white noise, where you become somewhat as an observer, you get dejected by not understanding the story in front of you or everything that might be in the bill, or keep reading about all the things that got passed through that they didn't understand, or like you just mentioned, like the corporate tax deductions. And you find yourself going, you know what, it's going to affect me one way or the other. Just do it. I mean, is that what the legislators are counting on? The fact that the American people are not going to be a part of this?
Well, that's why they did it this fast. They did it on Friday night. I was actually on the air with Patty Vasquez. We were listening to the debate as we were on the air. And I think they did this at about 1:15. And they did it in the dead of night, and they did it with this insane process so that nobody could read it, so that you had all these handwritten notes in the margin with words most people could not read at all. And they did it so nobody would be able to look at it. They did it deliberately that way because you would otherwise be uncovering things like the medical expense deduction that's going to cost people, like I was in my situation with my dad. We couldn't have afforded to keep him at home with the new tax plan in place. It would have killed us. It's going to, this plan is an abomination. It should not pass as is.
Look, you're always.
No, this is the tax foundation and the tax.
With something, the tax foundation.
And the CBO.
The tax foundation estimates 3 to 5% growth.
No, they don't. The tax foundation says even with dynamic scoring and that cockamamie growth you claim, they're still going to have a massive deficit increase.
You're always going to have. Palace intrigue media coverage. You're always going to have bloody murder headlines. Always. Just like with the small business and NFIB. That just comes with the territory. The dust hasn't settled. It's not over. You could still lose members.
Yes, and Democrats are not anywhere near the room.
You could still add members to this bill.
Is there any worry that any of this stuff is true where middle-class voters or working-class voters or anybody who's not necessarily affected by the corporate tax or let's say the economy doesn't bounce with any sort of growth from this, that this could be a real problem for a president or for ruling party of Republicans?
Politically, this is going to be bad for 2018. Absolutely, no question. Republicans are going to rue the day they did this thing.
You know, we're due. We might be due for a recession. You know, we're coming close. I'd like to get some capital formation out there. I'd like more money. And the
Except
fact is,
CEOs say they won't use it that way.
More people are better off under this tax bill. Not everyone.
No.
I don't like the SALT deduction, okay? But I'm saying I'd rather have the recession we had in 1991 was a mild recession. Through hindsight, we could say that compared to like 1982. I'd rather have that kind of recession, have these tax cuts, to have a stimulative economy, more people working to soften the blow.
That's Chris Varonis, Dave Lundy. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's get to Russia. And we'll talk about Roy Moore and the president's
endorsement
today. Full endorsement. That's Touche. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche here, 720 WGN. Dave Lundy and Chris Varonis in studio talking about the tax plan and other national political stories. Let's go to the Russia investigation. Robert Mueller, at the end of last week, a busy weekend that saw the president as well going to Twitter to defend and continue to talk about Hillary Clinton more than the actual Russia. And in a way, once again, go after the FBI and the law enforcement agencies.
In a brutal way.
So where are we with this? I mean, because I've heard both sides. I've heard that this is a big move, and if you watch SNL, it makes it seem like, okay, the president's going down. But then in some other areas, they say that this is actually a sign that they don't really have a case.
Oh, I think that's delusional, wishful thinking on the part of the president's supporters. Michael Flynn pled guilty to the least charge, the lowest charge he could. They have him on conspiracy to kidnap. They have him on all the stuff around Turkey.
What's the kidnap?
He entered a conspiracy to kidnap that cleric that the Turkish government in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And he was going to get an enormous payday if he did this. But there is conspiracy. Conspiracy is you make a decision and then you make a substantial step towards that decision. Sorry, that's my law school education for the day.
All right.
So there's so much they have Flynn on. But today was a remarkable day because this went straight Nixonian with the president's lawyer, who said that the president of the United States cannot obstruct justice by definition, which was strikingly similar to when Richard Nixon told David Frost, if the president does it, it is not illegal. And as many legal analysts have pointed out today, poppycock.
Yeah, what do you say to that, Chris? I mean, does it just make it worse, the fact that the lawyers have gotten involved in trying to coming out and saying, well, the president's sloppy tweets?
It's silly. It's stupid. Trump's doing himself no favors. I'd hate to be on that legal team, you know, just sweating bullets with it every morning, you know, basically, especially on the weekend. I say this as a Republican. I am all follow the facts where they lead us, just like we did with Bill Clinton, okay? Because no man's above the law, even the commander-in-chief, and that's very American. I got to say, though, you know, if you look at the nuances here, you wonder why a lot of Trump supporters dig in, you know, and they want to fight this tooth and nail. You look at that story with Brian Ross at ABC, appalling. That is appalling how they could have botched that story like that. We're talking ABC, you know? But Peter Jennings is rolling over in his grave. I mean, the guy who I grew up on.
But
no, Dave, you've got to acknowledge that the media is not helping this situation. They're making it worse in some regards. And, you know, they're giving good cause to Trump supporters that are wondering, like, they're out to get us.
Based
on facts. They're out to get us.
Acknowledge that.
Quite honestly, people want to decapitate Trump. And that's the agenda of a lot of people.
I will not acknowledge what you just said, because Brian Ross screwed up. He immediately apologized. He was immediately suspended by ABC News. It was instantaneous.
They had to do that.
They could have dug it. If they were Donald Trump, they would dig in. They would send nasty tweets. They would say this is fake news. I mean,
so we should play by Trump.
You're saying it's ABC, so that means right?
No.
You're saying it's ABC, so they're a legitimate news organization. If you look at all the stories that Donald Trump said were fake news, 99.9% of them have turned out to actually be real news.
I'm agreeing with you, Brother Lundy, on the merits of the case, and there's something there.
Okay.
And I'm looking for a little scrap of bread here, just to say that this is a hysterical environment, and it's not all Trump who's behind it.
Well, it's a hysterical environment that Donald Trump creates on a daily basis with these nonsense tweets. And the tweet that he did today and the phone call he did today from Air Force One calling Roy Moore the child molester and endorsing the president of the United States endorsed a child molester today for U.S. Senate.
Allegedly.
Yeah, okay, I'm cool with that, because did you see the story about the 17-year-old who had all these cards that Roy Moore signed from when they were dating?
Let me ask you this, though, because I understand the outrage of wanting to, or the endorsement of the president for someone who's under this kind of scrutiny for his past. But this Roy Moore, I was reading a great story today about where he kind of is Donald Trump, an outlier to the party. He's not traditional in the sense he does a lot of the same things. So it's not that big of a stretch for President Trump to say, I'm with this guy. It almost as I think about the Access Hollywood tape and everything that was coming, like Donald Trump knows this. They're cut from the same cloth. It's not that surprising to me that President Trump would do this.
No, it's not surprising at all that he would do it. In fact, frankly, when he endorsed Luther Strange, I was shocked, because I thought he would endorse Roy Moore, you know, months ago. Donald Trump is delusional, as he proved again with the Billy Bush tape, because Billy Bush came out and said, of course he said it.
But I wonder, at some point or another, the outrage and the shock of everything that Donald Trump does... At some point or another, you have to recognize, you know what, he's following a path, and we're just, you know, especially the media is not paying attention to that path. And it does not shock or surprise me or even stun me that he would come out and officially endorse this candidate.
There's an amen corner in the Democratic Party and in the media, quite frankly, that's just an outrage machine. And every little hiccup of Trump is going to be a volcano blowing up.
Last word, Dave Lundy.
The president of the United States is debasing the presidency on a daily basis.
There it is. Dave Lundy, Chris Varonis, that's how we end Touche. Guys, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. It's over.
It's over?
A 24-yard field goal attempt for Gold, who's 4-for-4 today. And Gold is good with 4 seconds to go, his fifth field goal of the game. What a return to Chicago.
I joked about a little bit earlier, I can't remember a time in possibly NFL history in which an entire stadium and possibly an entire fan base was like, I'll go for the kicker. That was the case yesterday as Robbie Gould and the San Francisco 49ers beat the Bears 15-14 at Soldier Field. A beautiful day on the lake, but to watch the Bears fall to 3-9. And it's just one of those games, and it's time for the Monday evening quarterback, appropriate time to discuss all matters, whether it be the stalling and, I guess, unraveling of the Bears offense, the sputtering and inconsistencies of the Bears defense, the absent-mindedness of the Bears coaching staff, all the way down the line, you name it, there have been problems this season. This has been a really frustrating one for Chicago Bears fans. On the line with us, the best in the business, a man who covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. Adam Hogue. Adam!
Hey, Justin.
Did I sum that up correctly? I mean, one of the more frustrating seasons in modern Bears history.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, this is right up there with 2014 with Mark Trestman, a year that there were a lot of expectations and it all unraveled and just kept unraveling. And I think by the end of that season, we all realized that there were major flaws with the roster. Now, there's some of those flaws are still on this roster. There's still depth issues and obviously on offense, not enough weapons. But I think we can all agree that this team should be better than 3-9 right now, and it's been a colossal disappointment, and unfortunately just seems to be getting worse and worse.
Well, I mean, there are bright spots and there are weaknesses, and we'll talk about both. 312-981-7200. But let's first talk about coming into this game, all eyes were on the Jimmy Garoppolo-Mitchell Trubisky matchup, because this was to be the first start for Jimmy Garoppolo, an Illinois product, grew up in the area. They made that abundantly clear on the broadcast. But he did well. I mean, there was some talk that he could have been a Chicago Bear at one point, but yesterday he showed a lot of poise and did damage to the Chicago Bears.
He did. He looked like a guy who had been developing under Tom Brady for 3.5 years. He looked really right. Comfortable and poised and confident, and he got the ball out quickly. He went through his progressions well, and for a guy who just got traded there a few weeks ago and was still learning the offense, I was very, very, very impressed with Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy who I liked a lot coming out of Eastern Illinois, have liked since he's been in the league. And thought was somebody that the Bears should target. And, you know, they decided to go after Mitch Trubisky, and there's no reason why Mitch Trubisky still can't be a really good quarterback for a long time with the Bears. And on his side of it, I thought Trubisky played fine. I think what you could just tell sort of watching the game, though, is that Garoppolo was more comfortable. And I think you can look at it in a number of ways. On one side, Garoppolo's only been on that team for a few weeks, so maybe you would have expected Trubisky to look more comfortable since he's now played, 7 starts now with mm-hmm. the Bears? And I'm sorry, 8 now at this point. So, but on the flip side, he's still a rookie, and he did not develop under Tom Brady for 3.5 years. So you can look at it a number of ways. I think both quarterbacks are still promising. And unfortunately, to me, what's so difficult, and we've talked about this, Justin, this whole season just seems like a wash with Mitch Trubisky. I think he's gaining experience and he can take from that. But what I'm talking about is just in terms of evaluating him. I still don't know how to evaluate him.
Right.
Because the offense is a mess. He doesn't have wide receivers, and the play calling is bizarre, and the personnel is bizarre, and it just no flow to the Bears offense at all.
Yeah, and it seems week to week that different personnel becomes preferred in the game plan, and that's maddening because the idea is to develop this quarterback, that each week you would see more pieces put in place to how this offense and how this quarterback is going to run this offense. But here's a great example, watching the Chicago Bears go from when they got trounced in Philly to, running for 6 yards in that game? They didn't really improve that much at Soldier Field, less than 50 yards. But now it was the passing game that looked in shatters, that no one was getting open, that they weren't moving the ball at will. I mean, there's so much to be said about the way this offense has almost unraveled and stopped developing under Mitch Trubisky.
Well, for a team that says they run the ball first, and the running game has disappeared completely over the last few weeks, and that's putting the quarterback in a tough spot. Look, to me, this looks like a team that is still is being coached by a coaching staff that cares more about winning football games right now and saving their jobs than developing the players who need to be developed. I do not think that Mitch Trubisky's strengths are being maximized to his best ability. I don't think he's being tested in the areas that he should be best tested right now to continue to develop. There's no identity on offense. I think that there are better ways to use his strengths to both help him and the team. And I don't know what it is, but there is just the offense is a lost cause at this point. I don't think it's going to get any better. But when you see a guy like Adam Shaheen, the Bears' second-round pick, playing 9 out of 37 snaps.
So he's not even getting on the field. It's not that he's not getting open. It's not that Trubisky's checking down to someone else. He's just not on the field.
Right, and I think it's pretty obvious, and we've talked about this before, that John Fox does not trust his young guys. And a quarterback, he has no choice, because the quarterback's going to be on the field the entire game, and we've already decided that Mike Glennon's bad. But they hung on to that one for longer than they probably should have. So, but all these other rookies, other than Eddie Jackson, who's supplanted as a starter, there's been a reluctance to keep them on the field, and I think it's a trust factor. So instead of letting a guy like Adam Shaheen take his lumps on the field and learn as he makes a big jump from D2 Ashland to the NFL, instead of letting him get that experience and make mistakes on the field, which are naturally going to happen, his blocking is okay. It's not great. He makes mistakes blocking. His route running is probably not 100% reliable as he faces different coverages. If you think about going back to the Saints game when he got jammed at the line of scrimmage by Von Bell on a play that was designed for him in the end zone, he did not handle that the best he could. And those are plays where I think this coaching staff that is under the gun and has to win football games went into yesterday's game saying, we cannot lose to the 49ers because they're bad, and if we lose to the 49ers, we're probably definitely getting fired, although that was probably already a foregone conclusion. So instead of developing players, instead of putting that first and foremost, they're more worried about saving their jobs. And by the way, I don't blame them. If I was in that situation, I would do the same thing. But that's creating the situation for Ryan Pace, where why is John Fox still the head coach?
You know, I have to add, and let's take a break so we stay on time, but that is the question. Does it really point to the general manager saying, you know, you've got the wrong system in place for what you're trying to accomplish with this team to rebuild and actually turn us back into a playoff contender? Adam Hogue, WGN Radio Bears Insider. You can find all this stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. We'll take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about the coaching. We just did that. Mike's on the line. I also got some texts all about some of the things that happened yesterday that were on John Fox's watch. It's Monday evening. Quarterback, stay with us.
Yeah, we talked about it, but it would have been done at about 136 or 140 or whatever it was. And, you know, we felt good about it, the block we had, you know, on a potential field goal. You know, neither one of those are great options, you know, at the 5-4 yard line.
That's right up there with playoffs. That's a good one. It's Monday evening quarterback here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Adam Hogue with me, WGN Radio Bears Insider. Find all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. Now it's time to really dissect the coaching job yesterday. And I want to let Mike start us off. Mike, you on the line? Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. What a dismal game. And how can John Fox get outfoxed by a first-year coach? That Kyle Shanahan just had a plan, and he went with it, and the guys just, you know, took over the game. 100 yards passing, 50 yards rushing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
It was terrible.
It's terrible. And you set it off. Thanks, Mike. Adam, did John Fox get out-coached yesterday?
Yeah, I think he did. I mean, look, this score was 15-14, but if you look at the yards, you look at the time of possession, the first downs, with the 49ers had two times as many.
It's 23-8.
Yeah, it was one team controlled the football the entire time, and it wasn't the Bears. And you know, give the defense credit for buckling down in the red zone and forcing field goals instead of touchdowns. But had they not done that, this would have been a blowout. Like, you would have been blown out by the 49ers, who came into Soldier Field with one win. And so I think you have to look at it that way and understand that this really, even though it was a one-point game that came down to a field goal at the end by Robbie Gould, you were dominated by the 49ers from start to finish. And Jimmy Garoppolo was able to get whatever he wanted. If it was 3rd and 5, he could get 6. If it was 3rd and 7, he could get 8. If it was 3rd and 12, he could get 13. Okay, he was 3rd down was abysmal for the Bears defense.
Yeah, what was going on? It felt abnormal, like for any NFL game to have that much success on 3rd down.
It did. And, you know, look, the defense, we've been seeing this for a few weeks now, just sort of slowly, I don't want to say fall apart because they're not playing horribly, but it's just the depth isn't there and they keep losing more and more guys. They started 2 guys who got cut out of training camp. Veterans, 30-year-olds.
Picked up this week,
started. And by the way, in the last segment I talked about Adam Shaheen not playing. This really, I did not understand this. Let's go all the way back to the end of training camp. Final cuts. They let go of Chris Brzezinski. They kept DeAndre Hall, second-year player out of Northern Iowa who they drafted in the 4th round, on the original 53-man roster even though he was hurt. And the reasoning for that was they wanted to put him on IR so that he could return later in the year. And to be able to do that, you have to be on the original 53-man roster. So they basically burned a roster spot for a day during final cuts so that they could bring Hall back later in the year. When did they bring Hall back? Saturday. Guess what they also did this week? They re-signed Chris Brzezinski.
The same guy that was cut for DeAndre. That's crazy.
And started him over DeAndre Hall, who's a 23-year-old prospect. It makes zero sense. It goes back to, who do you think John Fox trusts more? He trusts Chris Brzezinski, the veteran, and they're not developing a young guy in that situation. And it is frustrating when you got such a young team that needs reps.
And it felt to me, obviously with Pernell McPhee going out of the game at one point, I don't know if he came back or not, but the pass rush for the Bears is decimated. With Leonard Floyd gone, Akeem Hicks has not had that support on the outside. He had you know, disappears. They're not getting. They didn't come close to Jimmy Garoppolo yesterday. It just felt that the 3rd down that Garoppolo was back there picking them apart. And when you've got a guy like Chris Brzezinski who came off the waiver wire, I mean, they had to fit him for a jersey on Saturday. You can understand that. Yeah, maybe he's not in the right spot to stop a 3rd and 8.
Yeah, and Lamar Houston had the only sack, and he was re-signed. A couple days ago, and also was let go at the end of the preseason. So that just shows you where this defense at right now. It's just too many injuries, and it's at this point, fair enough excuses.
Let me ask you this, Adam, because I want to get in before we get to the news. The play at the end of the game, and this is one that you wrote about eloquently on the website, wgnradio.com/Bears, and it's really has picked up steam today. The idea that John Fox discounted the notion of letting the 49ers score. They inexplicably ran at the end of the game instead of going down to a knee. And Carlos Hyde could have easily scored. Kyle Fuller out of nowhere tackled him when it looked like everyone was on the same page but him. But John Fox confirmed that that wasn't the plan. They did not want to do that. They wanted to go for the block. You point out that's a head scratcher from the coaching position.
Oh, it absolutely is. There's only one way to handle that, and we've been through this before. There was a game, John Fox's 6th game as head coach back in 2015. They lost a game in Detroit, you may remember, in overtime, and there was a similar situation where this came up. And look, I realize that old-school football people cannot wrap their brains around the idea of letting an opposing team score a touchdown. But when the other team gets into a first and goal situation, first and goal, second and goal, whatever it is, if they get into an and goal situation at the end of the game where you have no timeouts to stop them, okay, that means that they can kneel and set up the game-winning field goal as time expires, okay? So the only way you can potentially get the ball back and win the game is if you let them score a touchdown. The only other possible solution is that an NFL kicker somehow misses a college extra point. and maybe the holder drops the snap or something,
right,
which you never, ever, 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 ever see at the NFL level. So in that situation yesterday, and I tweeted at the time, John Fox, the only correct coaching move there was to let the 49ers score and give his quarterback the ball, the number two overall draft pick, by the way, the ball with 90 seconds left to go down and score a touchdown.
It follows the narrative of John Fox, doesn't trust his rookie quarterback, doesn't trust his offense, would rather go for the idea of possibly a mistake by the other team to walk away with a victory.
Well, and that is just a damning statement.
Yeah.
If he is trusting them to screw Robbie Gould to screw up at a college extra point instead of giving Mitch Trubisky the ball with 90 seconds, that is really, really bad.
Now, Ron says, I know John Fox is taking criticism. This is Ron 312 for not allowing him to score. But Fox might be right in this situation. He said in his 28 years of coaching, he's never seen that strategy work. Is it possible that you rely on a coach's experience who's coached for years in the NFL and that has been tried at different times and it never works? I mean, is there a possibility that John Fox went with his gut and his instinct to say, I've tried this, I've been on teams that's tried this, it never works?
Well, the one thing Fox said that is accurate is that neither option is great. But one option guarantees you losing the game, and the other gives you a slight chance, even if it's only 1 or 2%. Okay,
right.
So
right.
You have to go with the one that gives you a chance, even if it's bleak. And I disagree. I mean, I can't off the top of my head think of a situation where a team has let the other team score and then goes down and successfully scores again to retake the lead. But I know it's happened at both the college and NFL level. I know I've seen it happen before.
In any case, it's about character and it's about the idea that you want to win the game and you'll do at anything possible to win the game, not hope that the other team loses it.
Right. And I just think, though, that some of these old school football guys just can't get it through their head of letting the other team score a touchdown. I get it. That's hard. That's a hard thing to think about. But really, if you think about it, Kyle Shanahan screwed up on second down.
Yeah, he should have run it.
He should have knelt on second and third down. They actually ran a running play. That was a gift to the Bears.
Yeah, there's that first year coaching, right?
Yeah, and instead of letting him score, they tackled Carlos Hyde in the backfield, and they let the clock run.
Yeah. Adam Hogue, WGN Radio Bears Insider, WGNradio.com/Bears. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll get the update on Rob's news tonight. We'll come back. We've got a lot of great texts and calls coming in. We're talking about the Bears' loss to the Niners, and we'll look forward to whether or not the Bears will actually be better than they were last year. 3-13. Right now, 3-9. Not so sure. Stay with us.
Trubisky looking that way. Fires end zone. Caught! Touchdown, Dontrell Inman, working on Maven, who just came in for the injured Dante Johnson, and the Bears take the lead.
That was a lone bright spot. Monday evening quarterback here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Adam Hogue is here as well. WGNradio.com/Bears. Find out all his information there, WGN Radio Bears Insider. All right, as we continue to talk, a lot of texts coming in, more than usual, Adam, just about people fed up with John Fox and fed up with this regime that some saying the worst coach in Bears history. We mentioned a couple of weeks, last time we were on, I think we kind of sussed out the stat that this is only match, I think it matches the longest run in modern Bears history of playoff-less teams. From the 1996 to 2000, maybe, with Wanstead and Giron and that time that every Bears fan just wants to forget?
Yeah, I think that's this is comparable for sure. The kind of the late 90s to right now, the last 7 years, it's been a pretty tough run of Bears football. And I've said this before, but there's one player on the Bears right now who has been on a winning Bears team, and that's Sherrick McManus, going back to 2012 when the Bears were 10-6 and still fired Lovie Smith. No one else on this roster has been on a winning Bears team.
That's hard to believe that they fired Lovie Smith at 10-6. We love to pull that. I love to suss that. I'm a huge Lovie fan. I love that team had notoriety and that the national networks of sports wanted to talk about us because of guys like Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Julius Peppers. But there were a lot of years in between there of 7-9.
Yeah. Oh, there were. And we forget that he stopped beating the Packers as soon as Aaron Rodgers took over. And... Yeah. and they never were able to maximize Jay Cutler. Now, at the time, you understand why Phil Emery was like, all right, we got to get a new head coach and maximize Jay Cutler's talents so that everyone could see. And if you go back to that time, nobody was really criticizing that line of thinking. The problem is he just made a terrible head coaching hire, and the whole thing fell apart, and the Bears are still trying to dig out of that.
All right, so here we go again. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion at this point that John Fox and probably much of his staff, maybe even Vic Fangio, we'll get to that, but are not going to be with us next season. What do the Bears have to look for? You know, we've seen these wonder coaches in L.A., as in Philadelphia, and other places, these offensive minds, they call their own plays. Yeah. These young former coordinators that have found themselves at the top of the heap. Is that the kind of coach we're looking for, or are we going to go back for the coach with NFL experience, head coach experience?
Well, I would be I'd be surprised if they hire somebody with head coaching experience. And that was a big deal when the Bears hired John Fox, because they had never done that since rehiring George Halas, right? It went back a really long time. So I would think that they most likely, if I had to put my money on it right now, they'll hire some up and coming offensive coordinator type guy. But I think you have to learn you have to be careful with that, because we saw with Mark Trestman that you still have to be able to command a locker room. You still have to be able to be a head coach, not just an offensive coordinator. That's why you're being hired as a head coach. So I think Ryan Pace knows that. So they're gonna go out and try to find not just somebody that can call plays for Mitch Trubisky and improve this offense that's been a disaster this year, but it also has to be somebody that can command the locker room, get their respect, and also put a decent defense out there, which the Bears failed to do with Mark Trestman.
Yeah. I'm interested because I think it was the game against the Eagles. We didn't get to talk after that because of the holidays and everything. But, you know, there was one of the announcers was talking about how Carson Wentz played at Dakota, which South Dakota or wherever he played, and he played in a system that was very similar to what Peterson ran in Philadelphia. So he was hired by the general manager or the coach there with the knowledge that he played the same system, so they had a leg up. They talked about how Mitchell Trubisky was not. They didn't necessarily point that out to be a negative, but they said he came from a different system at Carolina, and he did not it was different than what the Bears are running here in Chicago. Is that something that, you know, I don't know. I wonder if that's part of the idea of trying to fix this Bears franchise, to make smart decisions like that, to get the right people in the right place to play the system we play, as opposed to hiring talent that doesn't fit.
Yeah, and look, it's a great point, and it was a big reason why I love Carson Wentz coming out of college. He played at North Dakota State. It was a pro-style offense, and you could just tell when he showed up at the Senior Bowl that year in Mobile, Alabama, that he was poised and comfortable running an NFL style. It did not look like he was coming from an FCS school. He fit in with the top players that were running around that field from Alabama and Auburn and all these SEC schools. So he got that right away. He did not really have to be taught that when he got to the NFL. Now, he still went through some struggles last year, like any rookie quarterback does. But Mitch Trubisky absolutely is, I don't want to say struggling, but going through, taking his lumps, going through an NFL style where it's not just half field reads, full field reads. And I think that there have been times where we've seen him go 1-2-3 and hit that third read. There's been many other times where he doesn't get to that third read. He panics, tucks the ball. You know, we saw a play there at the end of the game on the Bears' last drive where he probably should have tried to throw the ball downfield, and instead he tucked it and ran out of bounds, and that didn't really accomplish anything. It gave the 49ers the ball back for their what turned out to be their game-winning drive. So it's stuff like that that he is struggling with, and it doesn't help when this offense that he's learning isn't working. It doesn't have any kind of identity whatsoever. So the Bears have to find somebody that can teach Mitch what he needs to learn, but also come up with an offense with some kind of identity that he can lean on as a quarterback.
Yeah, and I think of quarterbacks and systems I think of winning teams right now, the New Orleans Saints or the Atlanta Falcons, and the Falcons lost yesterday. But even to an extent, the Minnesota Vikings play this way, and the New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs and Philadelphia as well. This idea that there is a, I don't know if it's a hike and throw kind of concept where they're throwing the ball around, a lot of backs on routes that are coming out of the backfield that aren't check downs on third and eight to throw three. You know, it just feels to me you're seeing, Russell Wilson plays it as well, this idea that there is so much more emphasis on hitting that, you know, the open receiver at the right time, regardless of down and distance, if that makes sense. Jimmy Garoppolo did it yesterday, where it was just like, here he is throwing third and eight, and he's finding a guy in a 12-yard route. And I don't know, there was just something about, I'm like, yeah, I know that's how the NFL is played these days, and the Bears aren't playing that way.
Well, look, good offenses have three things, okay? First one is reliable weapons. I don't even want to go as far as to say, like, Antonio Brown, because that's such a rare player to have that not all the offenses have that, but they have guys like a Jordy Nelson, who's not on that athletic capability, but Aaron Rodgers can rely on him and knows where he's going to be. So reliable weapons first and foremost. Second thing, quarterbacks that have the experience to read what they're seeing at the line of scrimmage, check out of what's not going to work and check to something that is going to work. And then that's the third thing, an identity. A handful of plays that experienced quarterback knows he can go to and hit those reliable receivers when he needs to make a check at the line of scrimmage. Right now, the Bears don't have any of that. Yeah. They don't have the reliable weapons. They don't have the experienced quarterback. He'll get that as he goes through time. But that third thing falls on the offensive coordinator and the head coach for not coming up with any kind of identity, not establishing any kind of offensive identity. What do you think Mitch Trubisky's thinking when he's at the line of scrimmage and he goes, this is not going to work? Okay, well, what's plan B? I don't think they know what plan B is, and that's the problem right now.
And it's obvious when you look at players like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, who've made their career on being able to make adjustments at the line. I mean, that's the NFL now. I mean, this isn't college where they all stop and look at the coach at the 15-second mark. That's my favorite thing in college football, where they all look to the right. And they look.
And by the way, Justin, that's the offense that Mitch, when we talk about this, that's what Trubisky came from. He was in the more of a spread out type thing. Now, he did have full field reads and some pro concepts, but it was, okay, what am I looking at? Let's check to the sideline. And the sideline, the coaches on the sideline, you know, checked into whatever they were doing, and Mitch Trubisky did not have that responsibility. Mm. So that's part of him learning here at the NFL level, because they don't do that here.
Let me ask you this, Adam, and Adam Hogue on the line, Monday evening quarterback. We're really thinking about the future of the Bears right here as opposed to what we saw yesterday. I wondered today, I was like, well, it's obvious to me that the Bears are going to be a top five pick again, regardless how it shakes out. Maybe they're a little higher, maybe they're a little lower. But the point being, they're pretty much where they were last year. And I go, well, obviously a wide receiver. But then I'm like, yeah, you got Kevin White and you don't really want to go down that area. There's not too many top 10 picks that are wide receivers that ever work out. And then I'm like, where do the Bears need the most help? I mean, obviously, we all know about weapons on the offensive side, but I would pass on a running back. I'd pass on a quarterback. I'd probably pass on a defensive front seven. Where do you think a top five pick fits in for the Chicago Bears?
Well, they have enough needs that they can still kind of go best player available, eliminating some positions. Obviously, they're not going to take a quarterback again.
Right.
And I agree,
you would
they're
think
not going
right?
to. They're not going to take a running back. Saquon Barkley from Penn State's probably the only one you would even consider, but he'll probably be gone unless the Bears. Well, he might be in the mix for top three. We'll see how that all plays out. But you could make an argument for a wide receiver. Yeah, unfortunately, they need a do-over on the Kevin White pick, and that's just unfortunate, but it's true. Okay, and then outside linebacker, they clearly need help getting after the quarterback. Unfortunately, again, that's who you picked in the second year as your first-round pick. You drafted Leonard Floyd, but you still need more help there. Offensive line, they're just not getting consistent play from their offensive tackles. They could use depth on the interior, part two with the way that Kyle Long continues to be beat up and Josh Sitton is just getting older. Okay, so you can look up and down the offensive line and say that if there's a stud there, you take him. And then you look in the secondary. You know, all this praise about Kyle Fuller, I get it, but I think we're relying too much on the fact that he didn't even play a year ago and struggled the 2 years before that. He has been better. He has not been a Pro Bowl corner. Okay, so he got asked about the Pro Bowl today, and my jaw dropped. He's not close to being a Pro Bowl corner, and he's still not a great fit in this defense. And we'll see if they could be changing schemes for all we know this offseason. But you could make a strong argument for cornerback too. So there's a lot to pick from in the draft, and we'll obviously spend a long time this winter talking about all that.
Yeah, I guess. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, when I was thinking about it, I'm like, well, they really can't do this position. But I guess I have to think a little bit bigger in the way that some of the players that we have on paper thought to be satisfactory are not gamers. And yeah. And that's the problem where you go, okay, this person on, I mean, Adam Shaheen's a good example. I wouldn't go as far yet in his young career to say he's a bust. But when the coaching staff only puts him out for 9 out of 37 plays and he was a second round pick, You kind of start the head scratch going, maybe we need a new tight end.
Yeah, this is a great point you're bringing up, and it's a bigger conversation. I was thinking about this actually driving home from Hallis Hall earlier today. You know, we kind of fall in this trap, and I think the Browns are probably stuck in this too in Cleveland, just the fan base, the media, probably the organization too. When you're so bad for so long, the only thing you have to compare to is bad. Right? And that starts to set the bar so low. So, and I'm admitting this right now, I've probably been guilty of it. I've been giving Ryan Pace a lot of credit for his drafting. And you step back and look at it, and he's drafted a lot of solid players. He hasn't drafted any all pros.
Yeah. No and ballers. He's had, and no he's guys had, that are going to, like, I give Kyle Fuller a little, I mean, he wasn't drafted by him, but I give Kyle Fuller some credit for breaking balls up. But
that was a Phil Emery pick.
I'd like to see, and if it's Eddie Jackson or if it's Adrian Amos or it's a linebacker, Christian Jones, get the ball. Like, right. Far too often are these guys just not aware. And maybe that's my bad because I'm a Bears fan who loves defense and I've been spoiled by guys like Mike Brown and Brian Urlacher. And the 85 Bears, and we just assume there should be greatness in that regard. But that's what's missing out of this team. There are no players that go out and out-hustle and out-muscle the opposition.
There's one player that he acquired that is playing at an all-pro level, in my opinion, and that's Akeem Hicks. And it was a great signing. But there's so many other bad free agency signings that I don't know, outweigh it, but are, you know, you put them out there on the board and you compare what worked and what didn't. And with these draft picks, again, we compare it to so many bad years of drafting under Phil Emery and Jerry Angelo that it Ryan Pace deserves credit for drafting guys like Eddie Jackson and drafting Tariq Cohen and finding Jordan Howard in the fifth round. There's a lot of good, really good, actually, middle-round draft picks for what you typically get in those areas. But you go back to the first round. This is still a league where you have to draft all pros when you're drafting in the top 10. He has had three picks in the top 9. And one's not playing. The other's on IR, Leonard Floyd. I thought he showed some promise this year. But still, I mean, top 9, I don't know if he's showing that. And then Mitch Trubisky, who's obviously got a long way to go. And here he is. He's going to be drafting probably, like you said, in the top 5 again this year.
Lots to unpack, and we'll continue to do it here on the Download. Monday evening quarterback, where we get together with Adam Hoge, WGN Radio's Bears Insider, to talk about what we saw the Sunday before. Not a lot, but Adam, we'll talk with you next week. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
All right, coming up, Industry Nights. Mark Cairo's here with a great piece in Chicago Magazine about how restaurants are using your data. Yep, they're creating profiles. And this is a great thing. You better understand who you are and what you want to eat, but how could it also be used against you? Like a great piece, great moment in the story about what happens if they know you don't have a lot of money. That's my favorite part of the story. And they say, you know what, he can't afford it. Put him in the back. Like, is that what we're going with restaurants? The restaurant industry says no. But some of us cynics say yes. Mark Caro in studio coming up. Welcome back to Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Studio 435 tonight. FemDot is in the building. Chicago hip-hop artist, MC, who I came on the show back before his Red Bull Sound Select show at Metro this summer. Great kid. He was 21 at the time. I think he's 22 now. But he will be live in Studio 435 performing. Can't wait to have him in studio coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. FemDot, looking forward to it. It's going to be great. Well, it's time for Industry Night, our Monday night exploration into the world of food and hospitality. Last week, talked with Deb Perlman from Smitten Kitchen. Before that, we chatted up Gail Simmons from Top Chef. Tonight, we look at the way restaurants are trying to improve service through technology and, well, customer research. In the most recent Chicago Magazine, writer Mark Caro has a great piece about the ever-changing world of high-end dining and the lengths taken to make sure they really know their customer. And I mean really know. Through history of food and wine orders, to Google searches, to social media stalking, restaurants are now able to have a full profile on you before you walk through the doors. Facial recognition as well. Is this a good thing? Restaurants say yes, but some wonder if the information goes too far. Mark Caro, longtime Chicago journalist and a fill-in on this very program, is here tonight. Mark, great to see you.
Honored to be back in the seat.
I love this. I love this article. I mean, there's always been rumors and myths around what restaurants know about you when you make a reservation. This idea that, they check to see, you know, I work at WGN. Maybe they checked, you know, right. and to find out that they actually
that's
do.
That's easy, though.
That's the easy part, right. But they go way deeper. Talk about where this idea came from to talk about or to write this story, but also then we'll get into the nitty gritty of what they're doing here.
Yeah, well, it makes a certain amount of sense, right? So you could trace it back to this. So it's restaurants and data, and restaurants have, you know, traditionally not been the most technologically advanced industry, right? The whole tradition of it is very much like you have your maitre d', you have your chef, you have the bartender, people, you know, where everybody knows your name. Everyone wants to refer to Cheers, you know, even whether it's a restaurant or a bar.
Right.
Everyone, it all comes back to people's ideal vision of this is Cheers, and we're all Norm. Or, you know, whoever. And so it's been slow. And, you know, you buy something on Amazon or you rent something from Netflix and they're just like, hey, you want to watch Freddy Got Fingered? And you're like, well, I don't. But there's always an algorithm of someone suggesting something to you. And restaurants don't really work that way. But since 1998, when Open Table was founded, it's an online reservation system. They charge a lot of money, but what it sets you up with is that someone could go online at midnight and make a reservation, and you don't have to have someone standing by the phone to answer it. So it's a benefit. But you could put all these notes in there.
Right. Before that, I mean, it really was writing in a
binder.
Yeah, in a binder, right?
Yeah, binders or, I don't know, Rolodex or something. And you just think, oh, if I go there often enough, you know, someone's going to recognize me. So now they could put in the system, this person, you know, really like sitting at a freestanding table, don't put them at a booth. Or, you know, the still or sparkling water, they like still water. So you don't have to ask every time they're going to come in. Now, they might come in with someone who wants sparkling water. So that's the simple stuff. But then if there's a slippery slope from that to, you know, Googling the names of your dogs and going onto your Facebook page and saying, you know, this person, you know, is protesting this particular cause and ran the marathon in 4 hours and 23 minutes.
I mean, it's amazing that the material that they have on us in the way that they can just simply get these from Google searches or, like you said, from social media stalking. What do they use it for? I mean, is it just to essentially walk up to customers and be like, so, nice marathon run?
Right.
And you're like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Or just say, hey, you know, you ran it slower than the guy over at table 11 over there. Which is true. I mean, I was over at the Grace, pre-meeting one night, and it was right after the marathon. It was like Tuesday night or Wednesday night, and they were going through, and they had the marathon times for three different diners. Now, they weren't going to bring this up, but they knew who ran it faster, and one couple ran it together, so they were like 6 hours, but it was sweet that they ran it together. But the idea is that somehow maybe they have a server who's really into running, and it might come up, and they might bond in some way. And, you know, the way that Michael Musser put it, you know, and other restaurants do this too. You know, Nick Kokonis and the Alinea Group, they will Google everyone. They'll try to look at everyone's LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram and all this stuff. You know, if you're a Lenny Kravitz fan, which was the example that Michael Musick gave me at Grace, maybe, you know, there's a fan who's really into it. And you know, they'll just sort of, you know, you're not going to go up there and go, hey, I hear you like Lenny Kravitz, because that would seem like you're being stalked. But on the other hand, you might say, hey, are you going to go my way? And they're like, oh, Lenny Kravitz joke. I don't think they would.
Who are you and brought you here?
I'm sure they train servers to do it a little less clumsily than that.
But there, I mean, there's that kind of stuff, which is really the fun part, the idea of all the little things that you find out about the customers.
Right.
But at the center of all this is trying to maximize the experience for the diner.
Correct.
And that could be knowing what you ordered last time, what bottle of wine you drank last time, understanding more about the profile that you bring to the table.
And then there's just the question of how much of this information is useful and how much of it is white noise. I mean, I talked to Erin Phillips over at the Boca Group, and she's just like, you know, they were getting, there's a company called Venga that kind of consolidates stuff. So you can get Venga to, like, if you're a group like Boca Group or One Off or something like that, or Let Us Entertain You uses Venga as well. There will be shared information. So maybe you ordered a $75 bottle of Pinot Noir one night. They can compile this for you and give you your buying history. So you could, as a server, go up and say, oh, you know, we have that venison special again. And you as a diner might think, oh, that's so nice. I love venison. Or you might, as a diner, might think, why does the server know this? Wait a minute. How did they keep track on this? So like Boca, they sort of don't want to know, you know, what wine you ordered, because just because you ordered a bottle of Pinot Noir one time doesn't mean you're not going to want a Syrah because you ordered the duck instead of the salmon or whatever. So they're like, nah, it's white noise. It's too much information. So they collect some and they don't collect others. You know, Alpana Singh, she's just like, I had to stop getting, you know, that stuff altogether because it was ruining my zen. And I just don't think that, you know, people coming in for, you know, ravioli before a movie in Evanston want me to be cruising their Facebook page.
I mean, there's the positives, of course, is trying to maximize or customize an experience for a customer. The negative, and there are some negatives you talk about, and I brought this up at the beginning of the show and kind of goofed around with it, but one of the sources in the article talks about, well, what happens if they start to recognize that maybe this customer doesn't have a lot of money?
Right.
And therefore, they know they're not going to order the expensive stuff, so they're not that valuable to them, so they put them at a crappier table.
Yeah, it's like, hey, there's this table by the bathroom. And
That's a concern. That's what's brought up by a source in the story.
Right, and no one in the hospitality industry would ever say, oh, yeah, that's what we're using it for. I mean, it was interesting. One of the things that OpenTable and these other systems, because there are other systems as well, including Talk, Nick Kokonis' system, and just a bunch of other ones that are trying to come in. But they keep track of all of your cancellations and your no-shows. Now, no-show is kind of bad if you have a reservation, you don't show up. Cancellation, plans change, whatever. But if there's still something about seeing your name and saying, you know, canceled 11 times, didn't show up twice or whatever. And I always say, well, do you guys use this? Do you not give someone a reservation? They're like, oh, no, we'll still let them come in. But you, at some point,
it almost becomes like an Uber rating in the way that you're like, you're a one star customer.
At some point, you just sort of have to. It's just technology. It's information. It's data. And there's always that sense of, if they keep collecting everything, at what point does it become not only creepy, but just kind of, it's going to be used against me somehow. And the hospitality industry is specifically designed to treat you well. But, you know, not everyone can be a VIP, and you just never know. And so, yeah, there's that sense that somehow if they can create who are the people who are going to spend a lot or not spend a lot, then maybe those people are just going to, you know, you're going to be like, why are they getting seated? Oh, you know, they were here before you, wink, wink, but they weren't. They just were going to spend more money.
Mark Cairo's in studio. He's got a great piece in this month's Chicago Magazine about how the restaurant industry is using your data. It brings up a lot of great questions, philosophical questions, just about, you know, the question I have is if the concept of a high dining experience has always been to be treated like a VIP,
right,
to walk in regardless of your stature, your status, anything behind, you're paying the money, so service should be top notch. If you get to a certain point where that becomes almost leveled or tiered, in the way that, well, I know that Mark is a VIP. Justin Guy, I don't know anything about him, so he doesn't get as much VIP. I mean, do you start to get like the very concept of great customer service is somewhat compromised by the idea that this data makes it so specific?
Well, what they would say, I think, is that everyone is a VIP, and they really want you. And in fact, they won't even use the phrase VIP. I mean, there are all these acronyms that restaurants use, and some of them say PPX, which is sort of a French, you know, I'm not even going to try to say what it actually stands for. Grace calls people a TD, which for some reason stands for Tony Danza. It doesn't make any sense. But if they say someone's a TD and someone overhears it, no one's going to be offended. Or if they say someone's a VIP and you overhear it, you're going to think, oh, wait a minute. All right, they're going to get all the extra stuff and we're not. So, yeah, they want everyone to feel like you're getting the special treatment. But there also are people who will come in and spend so much money at your restaurant, and they'll just come in week after week and day after day and night after night. And they have very specific instructions. And sometimes they could be a PITA, P-I-T-A, which is pain in the, so sometimes it's also dealing with difficult people, but they might have a lot of requests. So it's good for them to know, okay, this guy give him a hand towel before he sits down. He just wants a hand towel, and he wants it to be pre-moistened. I don't know. People want stuff. It could be just a matter of just customizing everything. So it doesn't mean you're more important. It just means they know more so they can help you more. And I suppose theoretically everyone would get that treatment.
And I don't think it's different than the other industries. We talked about ride-sharing industries, the way that you get a rating, by the way that you are both a customer and a driver. I think of the casino business, and if you go to a big casino in Las Vegas and you have a little card that says, and they already track how much money you spent before you got in the hotel, when you've been there before, and they treat you, if you're at a certain level, they treat you at VIP level. So it seems to me very similar to that concept that they're almost rewarding return customers.
Right. Hotels also. Hotels have been doing this longer than restaurants. The example in the story is, if you go into a Ritz and you ask for only feather pillows and you go to the Ritz in, China, you're still gonna get feather pillows, presumably because they have that in their system. So everything's about, collecting the data on you. And some of it you could say, well, great, I want them to know this. But then some of this also like, it's funny because one of the examples is, you come in with your mom and you end up having this really long meal. Do they sort of put that down? And the next time you come in, they're going to like space your courses out like every half hour. And you're like, no, I like eating fast. I just was with my mom, So
that's the downside.
As it is with almost everything. It's like there's the data and then there's how it's used. And there's just always this fear that it's going to start being used in these kind of cynical ways that reward the rich and punish the, I don't know where people would get that idea in this culture right now, but there are reasons to be cynical about almost everything, especially when it comes to collecting information about you that you don't realize they're collecting it. Even though for the most part, if I go in whatever restaurants know about me, I don't tend to mind. And if someone knows that I like sitting at a booth, great.
But that was the fun part about the article, was not only your experience of the reveal of what they know about you, but also going through some of the data of other people that said, stuff that it's almost like hanging chads that are there that they're like, well, we're going to delete this. It's like stuff that had nothing to do with the restaurant experience.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I was checking myself out and I thought, well, I've been a journalist. I was writing about food for the Tribune and I have a book, the foie gras wars. And so some of these people I've dealt with I was sort of getting the tour of the different sites. And one of them was for the Boca Group. And they had someone at Balena had written down that I'd annoyed Charlie Trotter with the series that I'd written for the Tribune and that he kicked me out of his auction, which is true. The woman at Boca who was looking at this, she's like, I don't know how this would help us serve you. And I'm just like, yeah, it's a good question. I thought it was hilarious.
But that's the fear. That's payback.
And I've eaten at Balena and it's certainly never come up. And I never had any sense that it was like, I never remember discussing that with anyone. So that was sort of, so they deleted that when I started laughing at it. You know, they had lawyer, you know, something else got deleted was a note for a guy. It said lawyer for a guy who shot bin Laden. And she's like, I don't know how this, you're not going to just like bring that up in conversation.
And I also love the, I forgot the name of it, was Spider maybe, but the,
oh, yeah.
What they, when they feel like they may know who a restaurant reviewer is.
Yeah. Grace, they'll call you a spider. If they can't find information about who you are, they think you might be rating for Michelin, or you might be rating for Forbes, you might be a reviewer. So the tip, people at home, is when you go into one of these really nice restaurants, bring a reporter's notebook, ask a lot of questions. They'll think you're a spider, and then boom, VIP, congratulations.
Order one of everything.
And, yeah, order yeah. way too much,
and wear,
which you will have to pay for.
Right, and wear a wrestling mask. Do that,
ask
and
a
then
lot
they're
of
like,
questions.
Oh, what's wow, this guy's so mysterious. He must be a reviewer.
Yeah.
Mark Cairo, great piece in Chicago Magazine. You can find it on it at chicagomag.com. A longtime Chicago journalist, and also fill in here on the program download. Love when you're on. Mark, thanks for joining us and giving us the 411 on how our data is being used.
Nah, your show is awesome. It's a pleasure to be here on either side.
All right, coming up, FemDots in Studio 435. I'm looking forward to that performance. I was listening to his music all day today. I got one of the new voice remotes from Comcast. They sent it in the mail. So now I can go, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And they go right to it. But I also was able to, I probably could have done this with my old remote, but I have like a little tuner that does the audio for the TV and everything. And now I've been able to sync it. So my life has changed.
Ah.
I went from in a single moment, I went from a one remote, or from a three remote family to a one.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Now that's a weekend, right? That's when you feel like you've done something. Like I feel like I don't have to do a chore for like a week and a half just for that fix.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah, that's good.
We when we got the voice, I don't know if this is similar in your household, but when we first got the voice activated remote control, we just say funny words into it and see if it pops up on the bottom, like boobs, and see if it says boobs, if it could find anything or
what comes up off of boobs.
It's like a 12-year-old
boy. I do have a 10-year-old, and he hasn't tried that yet. I'm surprised. He's very good at it. Like he's already, you know, going after his programs, Cartoon Network, and it pops up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't get a chance to say this. You know, I want to give away with Adam, but I reclaimed my Sunday yesterday. I did not watch the Bears in real time. I taped it, and I went to the ballet instead. I went to the Joffrey Ballet's Nutcracker, which is lovely. Yeah,
fancy.
I've been talking about it on the program. You know, I'm not gonna be held hostage all day. You know, I should have done it earlier. I should have done it back in October, but there's still hope. But when you get to 3-8 and you're playing the Niners. You know, I'll pick it up later.
I was looking at the schedule, and there's a game that they have on Saturday.
Do they?
Like in they play the Bengals, yeah. And then I think the Lions.
It's a Saturday game.
It's a Saturday, like at 3:30. Is that new? Or was I looking at the wrong thing?
Pass. Yeah, I'm not kidding. I went and saw the Joffrey Ballet yesterday. I think it was, the old matinee. Oh, man, it's so good. I'm surprised you're not a Nutcracker guy, Pete Zimmerman, who Christmas is so hard and is our resident mm-hmm. Christmas guy. We're going to be doing a segment, which is called Christmas So Hard.
Yeah. I do play Christmas
dun,
dun, so hard.
Dun, 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 dun. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is you know, we had Ashley Weider on, the artistic director of Joffrey, and he paired up with Christopher Wheeldon, Broadway choreographer, to do this second year they've done it. It's really great. I really like it.
And were you a fan of the Nutcracker?
No, I'm not a fan. I'm not a ballet guy.
Uh-huh.
Contrary to popular belief. But there's something amazing about the artistry that human beings can make with their bodies. mm-hmm. when you're talking about ballet. And you know, I'm not, like I said, a ballet dance, modern dance guy. But there are moments where you're like, wow, I mean, that's stunning.
Yeah.
That stunning technique where you're spinning on one leg with your arch of your foot up to create almost like a line and be able to do that. I can't even fathom how they do that, without cramping. Like, I would cramp even trying.
Yeah, and when I go to my gym and we do stretches at the end, if there is one thing where they just have you lift up your one leg to balance on the other leg, I have to right. grab the side.
Right. There was no grabbing of the side in the Nutcracker.
No. They could balance themselves on one foot.
Oh, he fell down. No, it was a really great show at the Auditorium Theater, and that Auditorium Theater is amazing.
Yeah, beautiful.
It really is. It's a great experience for a Chicago Christmas because afterwards we went to the Palmer House.
Oh,
yeah, we walked right up there. Out. Yeah, and sat in the wrong section. We're told by three different servers this is reserved for high tea. Well, no one was sitting here, so and it's already at okay. All right. But I was trying to – it was funny because I was trying to tell my 10-year-old son that when I went to Columbia College, I – for the first year – this would be back in 1994. I would take the Metra train from Crystal Lake to downtown. And I would take it and I would walk from the Metra train at Ogilvie to Columbia College. Yeah, I was 18. You can do that, right? But one early on, my dad accompanied me, and he was a he's a Chicago rat. Like, he's just a guy who's like, oh, hey, we had to stop at every place. Oh, this is where Jimmy Ignatowski lived. Hey, there's Jimmy. Every time. All right, Dad. Yeah, someone lived above. This used to be a Woolworths. All right, we get it. Like, every dad who comes back to Chicago has to tell us where the Woolworths was. But he did it was just amazing to me. And I was trying to explain this to my 10-year-old who could care less. Could not care less. Yeah, I forgot whatever this is. But, that I was able to, from Wacker all the way to maybe Jackson and Wabash or Van Buren and Wabash, be able to cut through buildings in the winter and not be outside. Right? That's you could essentially
skill.
Do that. Right.
Yeah.
And my dad taught it to me. And there were points where it just got absurd. Where you would go into Carson's, you know, the old Carson Peary Scott on State Street.
Yeah.
Which is now, I think, it still is Carson. No, it's a Target.
Yeah, it's not Carson's.
It's Target, yeah. Anyway, you would go through it and you would, like, get to the back and there would be this old revolving door on the back that would go to the alley that wasn't even marked. They'd have, like, a rope up and be like, you can't go this way. But I would go that way anyway because my dad told me I could because he used to work at Carson Peary Scott back in the 60s. So he's like, yeah, I can do whatever I want. I worked here. I was I did some shipping stuff here at one point. And it led you down to the alleyway, and then you go out the alleyway and you cross right into the Palmer House. And you just walk the Palmer House all the way zigzag. You come out at the furthest end at Jackson or whatever it is. And I was trying to tell my son, just no interest. And I was like, I was trying to be objective. I was like, this is actually cool dad stuff.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of stuff that I can understand why there'd be zero interest in what I'm saying. But in this case, I was like, I thought this was pretty cool dad stuff to be like, let me almost Batmanify downtown Chicago for you.
Yeah, did you put it that way?
I didn't. Now I just came up with that.
Yeah, now you have piqued his interest with Batman.
Retell this story, I'll tell him I was dressed as Batman. And I was running from the Joker. We'll see how he responds to that. And Jack Black was in it. But yeah, it was really great. But my dad also said, hey, if you ever want to go up to the Palmer House, just go up and just sit up there. You can sit up in those chairs and look at the architecture he showed me up there. And that's because the lobby is kind of upstairs. And I was like, oh, yeah. So we were like, let's go up there and do that. And now good for them. They have a much more bustling lobby than they did back in 1995 mm-hmm. when I was sitting there taking a break between, you know, the Metro and Columbia intro to radio, you know. And I kind of got surly as I do in my older age. I just got surly by how it wasn't as easy anymore. It wasn't, it wasn't as back in the day.
Yeah.
So when I got the third server who was like, oh, you can't sit here. I'm like, meh. I turned into my dad. I was like, I can't because I sat here 20 years ago. I knew what kind of hotel you were before. So I know when this lobby wasn't as popping as before. It's because I know. I was here.
How far away were you from where you were able to sit?
Well, I had stayed. I didn't move.
Oh, you know. You did. You just put your
stayed.
Foot down.
No, I said, no one's sitting here. High tea's over.
But when you – see, I would be nervous that I'd be like
there was another,
looking over
there
my
was,
shoulder
no,
that
there
somebody
was a,
else is going to come. And
the people who we sat next to were like, oh, we reserved for 7, and this is 3 open so you can have it.
No.
So I already knew. I had an upper hand on the servers who kept mm-hmm. telling me I couldn't sit there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, these random strangers say that I can.
Is it a –
the high tea, like that's the reason. Like they wanted like a 50 a person.
Whatever, yeah,
for finger sandwiches from the Jewel. That's always gets me about high tea. I understand the concept of it, and I think it's great, but it doesn't include alcohol. And at the end of the day, the sandwiches look like they went to the deli section at the Mariano's. And I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm not paying $50 a pop. I know it's the style.
Yeah.
They're little finger sandwiches with the bread. But the way they're cut and everything, just, I don't know, it reminds me of like,
you don't get like a
you get some cupcakes
like
and
a
stuff
little
like
champagne
that.
Or anything?
I don't think so. I don't think the booze comes with it. Yeah, that's my point. I have $50 a person. Maybe it's my Luddite. Maybe it's just me where I'm like $50 a person includes booze, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I would say like one complimentary champagne.
Yeah, right. Something like that.
Or mimosa, what have you.
Yeah, so it was a fun day downtown. And the other thing that I do, which is a tad bit annoying, is the other thing that my dad taught me, which I love, is that it is Chicago. And you get this a lot, you know, because Chicago has changed. But it is Chicago, and it's not necessarily it's the safest place that you make it. Meaning if you walk through downtown Chicago on State Street or Jackson or any of the places looking up and walking really slow and meandering around, things can happen.
Something can happen.
It's just that's just nature. Nothing is going to happen, but you open yourself up. So I am much more of a swift, concentrated, focused, aggressive walker when I am downtown. Even when I'm by myself, I take the bus, come in here. I am on my way. I'm two lengths ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I sometimes pretend I'm a running back. Thinking or you know that I'm like looking out for my blockers. Right.
We're kindred spirit.
Yeah,
me
I always.
You.
I'm,
yep.
I'm, yeah, it's like
it's
a chess
a game.
Match.
It's a
I'm
game.
Like I'm a few moves ahead of you.
It's so fun.
Yeah,
it makes it fun. But I recognize that my wife and my 10-year-old son don't. They didn't get that lesson from Lenny Kaufman. They didn't get that swift walking lesson, right? And so I feel like I'm always like a block ahead of them. And then they get mad. Like, are you ashamed to be walking with us? I'm like, no, come on. We're trying to win this game. And so I always find myself, I was doing that in New York as well with my wife. Like New York, I double time it. Like it's my way of like, I'm going to fit in by being more ruthless.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure if in Chicago, the way to fit in is to walk as fast as you can. In New York, you have to walk double fast, which is not the case. I actually can make an argument that they actually are slower walkers, but I am walking like I've got to go to the bathroom. Like I am walking.
You're trucking. Yeah. I guess when I think about it, my wife always criticized me for walking too slow. And I guess it's not really that I'm walking. I walk at a, you know, crisp pace, but it's not really my speed, but it's my awareness.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
You got your sixes covered.
Yeah. Everybody around, I know what everybody's doing all around me. 12 people. I got you. I know what everything's. Yeah. You got to. Never been held up.
There you go. See? There you go. Do you mean held up like someone walking too slow or held up like someone put a gun on you?
Or, you know, like pickpocketed you know, what have you. You know, any crime has befallen me.
I had one experience in Chicago where I was, and I've talked about it on the show, but where I got mugged. And it was the worst kind of getting mugged because I always feel guilty because I didn't follow this, what we're talking about. But it was right in front of my house. Like it was the kind of thing where I came down the stairs in the front, and I just like bounded off the stairs and right into a guy with a gun.
Yeah, you're not going to do anything about that.
I know, but I was like, oh, I wanted it back. I wanted to rewind and be like, I should have stopped at the top and been like, what would Lenny do? Be ready to go outside. You know, yeah, like I just found myself like my guard down because I thought I was still close to my premises, you know, so. But whatever. That I always think back that way. I always think back to the idea that,
yeah,
I could have done more in that situation if I would have had my
wits about you.
Yeah, my Chicago wits
he,
about
he would have, the person with the gun would have said, ooh, this
well,
guy.
I'm not going to mess with this guy. He's walking too fast. Well, this guy must live here. I don't want to mess with this guy. He's not a tourist.
Paying attention.
He's paying attention. He's walking so fast. Sir.
I'll get the slow guy.
Yeah, I'll get the next one. That guy, he means business. You could tell by the way he's walking, he means business. All right, coming up in Studio 435 tonight, FemDot back in the building. We had FemDot, the up-and-coming rapper here in Chicago, on the program back in July? I think it was like right in the summertime before he played at Metro. He opened up for the Red Bull Sound Select show. Great interview. Talked to him about his new work. He is now performing live in studio tonight as part of Studio 435. So that's coming up. Coming up next. Coming up on the download, I wanted to point this out. I said at the beginning of the show that I wanted to point out that we are ready to rock December. Before we get to Studio 435, I got a couple minutes here. Listen to this. Coming up this month on the download, this month, Gary Oldman, the famed actor, he's playing Winston Churchill, new film, will be with us coming up. I think it's next week. Maybe this week? Is this week? Jeez. Already. All right. So Gary Oldman coming up. Michael Stuhlbarg, who the movie that he's in, Call Me By Your Name, was just won the LA Critics Best Film of the Year. And it's getting serious Oscar buzz, as well as he is for his role. Michael Stuhlbarg from Boardwalk Empire will be a guest as well. Dee Brown, the famed Illini point guard. Ashley Brown, the Broadway star. She's on the show last year, but she played Mary Poppins. I just heard one of the commercials running was for her show that's going to be at the Symphony Orchestra. David Yarrow, who's a great wildlife photographer, one of the best in the world, a British guy, going to come through. He's got an exhibit here in River North. We're going to talk with him. So many more people. Michael McDermott, guitar player. I mean, Sam Smith's got a new book, The Bulls Writer. We're going to talk with him as well. Chicago Acapella will be in studio. Terry Bors from Bors and Bernstein, the great sports talk show that was on The Score for afternoons for years. Terry Bors has a new book. Talk with him coming up. And there's so many great. Danny Shapiro from Scofflaw will be on Industry Night, one of the great mixologists here in the city of Chicago. So we have a lot of great guests coming through in December as we wrap up. I think our last show before we're out for the holidays will be that Friday before Christmas, so the 22nd. So that'll be the last show for the download. Then we're back, I think, right after New Year's. So, yeah, big stuff coming through. And that's just the stuff I told you about. That's essentially could fit one show. But there's all sorts of other stuff coming up. So there you go. Looking forward to that. All right. Studio 435 up next. FemDot getting ready. They're in the green room. They're going to come in and do a nice sound check during the news. Then we'll have some music for you. And, of course, Patty Vasquez coming up at 11. So stay with us. Chicago Bulls. Wow, they got blown out by the Cavaliers tonight. I watched one of those games this weekend. I forgot which one they were playing. It seemed like for a second they were winning that game, and then they ended up losing it. I forgot who it was. That's how bad. I get to a certain point where you're just not that I'm just not that interested in the NBA.
No?
Not right now. I don't know what
Christmas.
It is. Maybe Christmas. I was talking to Sam Panionovich today, and he said, did I do something wrong? I've fallen out of favor?
Yeah.
Because we haven't had Sammy on to talk about the NBA, and I'm like, it's just Blackhawks and all this stuff. And, yeah, you've fallen out of favor.
No, we've lost
interest. No, I joke.
I saw Mark Potash from the Sun-Times tweet that Chicago sports in, like, the last week is they're, like, 0-12. The Hawks have lost three or four in a row. The Bears lose. The Bulls stink.
What's going on with the Wolves? I haven't paid attention
to
the Wolves.
I think he included the Wolves. I think they might be like 0-2.
Wow. And then not so great on the college basketball front for the local teams.
Did you guys hit the Blackhawks?
Yeah, we got the Blackhawks in there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So what's going on?
Bad streak.
Just a bad streak. I need like a baseball therapist to come, or like from the natural to come in. Yeah. Losing is a disease. Remember that?
Yeah. You're right.
That's terrible. And, you know, I don't know. The Bears, of course, we know what we have with the Bears. The Bulls, the Blackhawks are the most surprising and the one that you have most optimism for as well, because you're like, they can turn it around. They'll be okay. You know, there's no cause for complete panic and alarm. But the Bulls are the worst team in the NBA. They're not even close to being competitive. I mean, it's so obviously a tank job.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing that thing that we all scoffed at, that the Philadelphia 76ers did and other teams have done for years now, the Lakers, where they just tank on purpose so they can get the number one pick. We're doing that.
Yeah.
How's it feel to be a sports fan in Chicago that has a team that does that?
And then I see, you know, on social media, when, you know, your Facebook friends and your Instagram followers, they're at the game, and like Sam has always talked about, like, the Bulls continue to sell that stadium. Are people going?
I don't know.
No, Taylor Lautner was at the game tonight.
Was he really?
Yeah.
In Chicago?
Yeah.
The Wolf from?
I saw a picture on Twitter.
No, that's the other guy.
That's the other guy?
The one who was there is the guy from Chicago Fire.
Oh. Which guy am I thinking of?
Randy Lautner?
No, I'm thinking of Tyler Lautner. Isn't that Tyler
Lautner? No, it's Taylor, but it's a different last name.
Oh, it's a different last name. I'm thinking about the one from...
isn't that like Team Jacob or Team whatever?
Yeah.
The guy with the abs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe how I'm dating myself that I don't remember the name of that movie series.
The vampire
things. Yeah, the vampire movie
things. Yeah.
Come on, what is it? Esmeralda doesn't know either. How do we... Twilight.
No,
Twilight.
Yeah,
Twilight.
Oh, my... Yes. What happened there to us?
The vampires and the werewolves.
Yeah.
Big old throwdown in the woods.
Yeah, well, okay.
Something like that.
Oh, no, wait, that is Taylor Lautner.
That
mind.
Is Taylor Lautner.
Well, then, wait, who's the guy...
What's the guy from the Chicago Fire that used to date
Taylor McKinney or King?
Oh, was he at the game?
No, Taylor Lautner.
What was he?
Lautner was at the game. The
All right, well, now was, I'm with you. Where
the
was
werewolf
he doing
was
there?
At the game. The Chicago Fire guy was not. Or they both were.
No, they, I just...
No, I
just,
got it confused.
Taylor Lautner.
I think that this is the beginnings of like a Chicago version of E, you guys. I think we really nailed it right here. We are the new Seacrest, Juliana Rancic.
No matter how you slice it, we've talked more about the Bulls now than we have in the previous 20-some-odd games.
Reminds me of that SNL bit where you had to decide if it was Dermot Mulroney or Dillett McDermott. It's just
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't know the difference of looking. Yeah. All right. All right. Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music Chicago has to offer right here in our Allstate Showcase studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Tonight, the Chicago hip-hop sounds of FemDot. FemDot is a 22-year-old artist and DePaul University student who's put out a couple EPs that he wrapped into the mixtape The 2020 Hour. A new single came out this fall called Happy October. New music is on the way. The prolific rapper has been featured in all sorts of up-and-coming lists and finishes his big 2020 hour tour this weekend and stops in D.C., Philly, and New York City. But first, he is here in Chicago on Michigan Avenue, Studio 435. A return to the download, FemDot. Yeah. I appreciate it. Good to see you.
Oh, man. Glad to be back.
Here he is, FemDot, with DJ Shy. Here's the track 97. Take it away, guys.
You are now listening to the 2020 hour with DJ Shy. They're teed anyway. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Oh, my soul, bro. The hottest radio station in the streets. WWFL FM radio.
I said, no KIDs, get glove for the D, and I'm glove with the D, supersonic with the speed. Heads hogging all my coins, need some really big rings, and you know I'm with the O, that's a really big team. I remember back when two were like 16, in the dice, he was screaming out that money ain't a thing, money ain't a thing. I just spent some money on my ring, money with my team, said you know that money be the thing. Look, tell me what you need, I know what you think, baby. I said you can come with me, you can bring your team, baby. It's that almighty O, you know who we be, baby. You can go ahead and creep, baby. TLC, baby. Tell me what you need, I know what you think, baby. I said you can come with me, you can bring your team, baby. It's that almighty O, you know who we be, baby. Go ahead and creep, baby. TLC, baby. King Dilla, that you need in your life with ya. Spit gems that Della Cram treated like Swisher. Say she want me in the future, I might buy slippers with the double G's. You know what I did in the double tree, sipping bubbly, dripping lovely with the girl you in love with, who now in love with me. Suddenly, probably cause she realized I got money trees. That's probably why she cuffed you like custody. Tell me what you need, I know what you think, baby. I said you can come with me, you can bring your team, baby. Almighty O, you know who we be, baby. You can go ahead and creep, baby. TLC, baby. Tell me what you need, I know what you think, baby. You can come with me, you can bring your team, baby. It's that almighty O, you know who we be, baby. You can go ahead and creep, baby. TLC, baby. Like, I said, cause I want that. Hey. Cause I want that old thing back with me. Said I want that old thing back, girl. Hey, I want that old thing back with me. Cause I want that. Hey, cause I want that old thing back with me. Said I want that. Hey. Said I want that. What? Look. Hey, so I need that old thing, I need that hair now, I need that role game, bring it back from the soul. So I need that fist fight, get in before street light, come on, I almost just don't come home. So I need that grass stain, I need that rough and tumble, kill a man at my man's house before we knew the struggle. Back when $5 was 2 weeks pay, and we'd go to the store and blow it all in the day. This before the taxes had took too much from you, moved to the burbs, but it's cool cause the hood got love for you. Back when big homie stole fish. It's not slugs for you. Had to convince your friend to come to the bar, which you need that blue mystic, please. Flame a hot with cheese, fruities for 40 cents a piece. Bumping 50 cent while I'm in the Honda with B. Riding down the street, hands out the window with scream. See, cause I want that old thing back with me. Cause I want that old thing back, baby. Hey, hey, cause I want that old thing back, baby. I want that old thing back with me. It's funny because I feel like the people out there are like, what is he doing? Like, why is his shoulders moving like this? This is good.
There he is. Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Ooh, this is fun. This is fun. Keep it going. What? $17,000 sweaters. Knew better to tell my mom it's Margiela. Had the flaws, sitting stains on eBay, making pickups. Touch more money than my mama house cars. Young jugging dude on honor roll. Gotta pay tuition, can't let mama know. That was when the same dudes who was plotting on me for some weeks probably ran up in my crib and they only took my sneaks. Same dudes up at lunch in middle school, I help them eat. Must have noticed the shoebox with the two racks by the seat. Can't even get mad, I used to hit licks too. Back in 06-2, I take them out as kicks too. 14 made honor roll, 16 I skipped school, 17 got my diploma, 18 I had fees, 7 I had bars, at 8 I had 18, 6 was in the booth because Big Bank had B-League, 10 and shorties at 14, fell in love at 16, broke hearts, the next year mine was broke at 18, I was broke at 18, could've so dope at 18, got to college, let me stroke while my roommate was there asleep, looking like my father's crazy. Crazy, yeah, we barely speak. Met BK, now his brother is mine. He in LA, I'm a slide right off the 405. I've been depressed, I've been happy, I've been stressed all the time. They make your real friends cause they say yes all the time. Getting this college diploma last night, I wasn't sober. So now I'm up in the morning just praying with a hangover. I used to wanna be cola, I used to wanna be over. I still wanna be cola. Used to think I'm dope, but I still wanna be dope. I'm still not with the drama. I know God is real, I see him and my sis and mom. It's crazy. I used to pull women with no confidence.
So imagine when I got low confidence, still question if I got it. Tune still say that I do. Still feel like King Dilla might body you and your crew. Gotta keep it authentic, know what you going through. Know I feel it since Jeezy had them snowman tees. I've been the realest. Cop man, I welcome that. Leave him at the welcome mat like, how's that for a welcome back? Yeah. You know, like when we have actual shows, does everybody get their hands up? It's like waving them, get their phones out. It's like waving them back and forth. And then I've got Shawnee and Ren in the background, and they, this is my part. This is my favorite part of the show every time. So many phones. Like, how do y'all have batteries? Yeah.
And Tune said, don't let them take your soul. Yeah. Hey. So I got my soul back. Yeah. He said, don't let him take control. Yeah. So I got control back. Yeah. Hey. He like what they hating for. Yeah. Tell him no. Yeah. Look. It's like they try and take my soul. Yeah. So I'ma take my soul back.
At least this gonna be fun. This gonna be fun. I think we have the first time with a soul track too. Look, I pray I remain modest, floss, stay off of gossip. To all these women who wanted us for profit, now pursue us. Crazy man, we wanted to be hoopers. And now, man, we balling off songs in these computers. It's crazy, even these choosy women would choose his hood. Fancy to her, me and Hooters, met her at Hookah. She texts me like, fam, like, tell me, just what's kombucha? I broke it down to you like I'm a tutor. She says she just trying to understand me. She like, you move like a regular cat, but you fancy. I'm like, you got a king behind you, so you more like fancy. So now I got hotel reservations ready. I know that's clever, so many dames around me. You think I had an umbrella on my back? It's more than a teller, what you asking. To have with somebody who's brown, so good with the bread, man, I spread it like a sandwich. Don't get jelly, little guy. I just hopped out of all black suburban swerving with dudes from the hood and some suburbans are bourbon. Salam alaikum. Might grab a turban or better yet, more jewelry like it's purging. And old girl hit my line like it's urgent. So I get all up in a spot like a surgeon. Or better yet, man, a chiroprac. I still need a one-on-one with Kyla Pratt. One-on-one I am. I know they can't sign these that. Bought with my wallet. They know that I ride sheet that. Who knew? The man with the shoes, color a su-woo, with a neck that can hold up the diamonds like it was ooh-woop. See, I would be getting a call right now, but in the actual song, I got a call from my brother, and he's calling for no reason, just to see how I'm doing. And I'm like, man, you call right in the middle of a super hot take, bro, can I call you back? And he was really confused, but I called him back. And but I called him back, and that's... And then, you know, had to turn into a nice little bridge, and he came back into it like, we changed the game like I'm Jaycion Stylus. First round pick to get the green like Len Bias. Flow cold, coke flows like Vietnam's finest. No, I'm going blow like Vietnam pilots. F-E-M-D-R, double L-A. Cut his air off, can't Van Gogh, that's word to L-A. I might pull up to the Grammys and Pelly Pelés in the same shade Sincere had on in Belay. Catch me in the back with the yak in hand. I'm cool, but watch Tune, he might smack your mans with Bam. And somehow, man, we smacked again. And you already know it's really happening. In first class for the first time, so you know how we coming, man. In a do-rag right next to a Republican. I hope you smell the wave grease, man. She mumbling under his breath like, I hate this man. It don't matter, stop hogging AC, man. So dapper, you would've thought, damn, with a lace meeting, man. Been winning, trying to chase me, man. You gon' need a while. Been serving dudes in my DNA, Serena Chow. Things starting to change, at least after ninth grade. That's when they started comparing me to Obuwale, Omo Naija, Wizkid, the next fella probably. Cootie like, girls never had cooties, right? We was choosing before they had boobies, right? And some booties, right? I said, man, you know that guy. In the whip, probably bumping Bobby Womack guy.
a creme. Middle finger to a siren, not sign unless we partner with cats. Either that or it's a sponsorship cat. You got a part in this cat. Coming from the mouth of who? Better than rap veteran. You know Della Creme. Say the boys, tell them boys, go ghost. Miss, I meddling around me. Robert Downey, I'm avenging the people. Get aggressive just with these messages. Make them sediments, leave them grounded. The flow is heaven sent. Stress coming in Kevin Federlin. I'm just spearheading them. I can't let them keep dancing around me. Vixen next to me like Prancer around me. Blitzing with the flow, don't like no red nose around me. Cause I can't let them clown me. I'd rather let them crown me. King Dilla.
Woo. Yeah, look at that. Yes. That was amazing. FemDot in Studio 435 putting a set together.
Oh man.
I like that. All right, there we go. That of course FemDot, the 22-year-old hip hop artist and DePaul University student who put out a couple of EPs in his career. We wrapped him into the mixtape, the 2020 Hour. He just put out a new single called Happy October this fall. New music is on the way. His tour takes him to D.C., Philly, and New York City coming up this weekend. Great to have the Chicago artist in studio tonight in Studio 435. That was awesome. I'm so excited. That was great. I was the Michigan Avenue was bouncing. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. More of FemDot in Studio 435. Stay with us. Studio 435 here on 720 WGN. FemDot, Chicago hip-hop artist in studio tonight. The 2020 Hour. Of course, the mixtape that was out earlier this year and new music on the way. A single came out this fall called Happy October. The 2020 Hour tour wraps up this weekend, right? In D.C., yeah. Philly, and New York City. FemDot, good to see you.
Good to see you,
That was
too,
a great
man.
Performance. Thanks. Thank you, and DJ Shy, thanks for being here.
Oh, man. No problem.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we had you on here, I think we just had a conversation about the music in the summertime. Talk about how it, I mean, it's been a couple months now, and a lot of that conversation was about what was next in the immediate future. How has the career treated you? How has the tour gone? And as you get ready for new music, how have you been evolving?
Everything's been going pretty well. The shows have been going pretty smooth. I'm excited to hit the East Coast and see what that's like. Yeah, like the music's going good. We're working on this new project now that we're actually getting ready to we're real like deeper in the grid of it now. Mm-hmm. So like it's starting to feel really good. So yeah, everything's been going pretty well. Shows are cool. Stuff's progressing. I feel like I'm further than where I was when I was here last. So
you know, I was watching. I think it was a little mini documentary you put together for the Happy October, and you mentioned something in there that made me think about the process of creating music. And in your case, you said you don't want anybody in studio who's not part of the song.
Yeah.
Who's not, because automatically with musicians, there are always going to be people hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's part of the fun of being a friend of a musician is you get to hang out on the couches or watch. But in your case, you're serious about the idea of people in the room need to be there to collaborate on the art. Why?
I feel like, because I'm a vibe person, and it's like also, I feel like when someone's there, sometimes just be there, it's cool, but also it's like when everyone's mind's working, like, yo, okay, let's add this, let's do this, or like, oh, I like how this sounds, you're kind of just there. And it's kind of just like, okay, like that kind of throws off the vibe.
So you're more of a collaborative artist in the sense that you'll bring the lyrics and the music, but at the same time, you want everybody in the room to find a way to contribute.
And that's the thing, like, I didn't used to be like that. I used to be just me and the engineer would just be locking in, but it just so happens that all of my friends are extremely talented. So it just makes it a lot simpler to work. Because a lot of stuff I still would do myself, but even if I have people making commentary, typically they're people who make music as well.
Right.
And it just so happens that a lot of my friends make music. So it's a lot simpler, so I can look at something from a different perspective, but it would still be a musical idea. But yeah, this new project is the most collaborative I've ever been. Like, a lot of these ideas are from like my head, and we make them from scratch and stuff like that. And that's something that I didn't do before. So I'm growing into somebody who's collaborating a lot more.
I love it. Well, let's talk more about that collaborative spirit. We'll take a quick break here, and we'll get an update from Rob on the news. FemDot in studio, Chicago hip hop artist. The 2020 Hour is the mixtape, and the tour wraps up this weekend in D.C., Philly, and New York City.
Yep,
but
yep.
FemDot is home right now in Chicago on Michigan Avenue in Studio 435. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us. All right. right. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music Chicago has to offer right here in our Allstate Showcase studio. Beautiful Michigan Avenue. Tonight, the hip-hop sounds of FemDot. FemDot, 22-year-old artist. Also a DePaul University student.
Yeah.
Who the mixtape, the 2020 Hour, came out this year. Mm-hmm. New single, Happy October. It came out this fall. New music on the way. The tour wraps up this weekend in D.C., Philly, and New York City. But right now, FemDot and DJ Shy in studio here in Chicago.
Hey.
All right. So let's, I mean, before we go any further, the one thing I mentioned earlier that, yeah. you know, we're gonna hear the track 97, but we actually heard a couple tracks, which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
I feel like I had an epiphany where I'm like, this is how I want to do Studio 435s from here on out, like a set.
Oh, man.
It was awesome. But that was more than one song.
Yeah, yeah.
What were the names of the songs?
We went from 97 into the song Soul, and actually then the last song was Happy October. So it was a smooth flow, so we figured we was going to
just
let
it,
let it rock. Yeah.
I like it. I like it. There was something great about it. I mean, I don't think that there's too many places in the world these days that a radio station is going to have a set like that. So
this is
I loved
true.
It. I loved yeah. it. All right. So picking up where we left off, you're talking about how you're changing as an artist, that you're becoming more collaborative.
Yeah.
What else are you changing? I mean, because you're a young guy. And the last time I was listening today back to the conversation and what I remembered, we were talking a lot about, you know, what, because you wrote songs when you were a young kid, mm-hmm. and you consider yourself a writer before necessarily a musician.
Yeah.
But how are you evolving as a musician? As you get older, are those things still true?
Yeah, they are, but I'm becoming more, I guess, of a musician, to say the least. Like, a lot of my music is sounding a lot more musical. I got to find better words. But, like, just from working with a lot of my friends, like, before I used to not be able to think in melody, just only in words, and now I can think in melody as well. I kind of, like, can come up with a lot of different, like, melodies and harmonies, and that just comes from working with my friends, and even just, like drums, like, getting used to hearing how music sounds more than, like, before. I've always been the type of person where it's, like, I hear the words before I hear anything else, like, but now, like, it's encompassing kind of the full package of me, like having an ear, you know, for certain production or for certain, like, ranges or melodies, or, like, now I can hear, like, people, or I can hear, like instruments on a certain song, or, like, when I'm working on it myself, like, ooh, this should probably have a violin, or this should probably have a piano.
Interesting.
And before it was like, ooh, I like that verse. Like, you know, like,
you're all about the words, right?
Right. So I think it was more or less, like, due to me putting so much time into the words that I've, like, been able to kind of branch away and start learning other stuff now.
Do you have to force yourself, or does it come naturally to push to the boundaries, to try things that you haven't tried before?
No, I think now it's just making sure stuff sounds how it does in my head, and the things in my head are sounding a lot bigger. So I think just with time, my ideas have gotten bigger, and it's just trusting my ideas that allows me to push things to the boundaries. And then I would, like, ask my friends, like, I'll talk to Shy, and he'll be like, yeah, no, I do that. Like, no, I do that, definitely. So,
you know, DJ Shy, bring you into the conversation. You know, when you're working with artists like FemDot, but other MCs, I mean, is it a collaborative experience? I mean, I've had some DJs say no, they, you know, it's lyrics, and others that say no, we work together.
No, it's really give it depends on who you work with. Like, when I work with Phil, it's more collaborative. Like, well, I'll send them an idea. It won't even be like a full, like, a beat or anything. It'll just be like maybe like some drums or like one simple melody, but not a whole, like, section. And he'll give me ideas back. He'll lay a verse, and then we'll build from there. With other artists I don't work with as closely though, it's more of a, I'll send you this beat, yeah. and then you'll make the words, and then I'll see if I like it, and we'll go from there.
Well,
pretty much.
I mean, you say that. It's so funny because the world has changed, and we kind of have talked about this on the program, but just to be a musician and an artist and that collaborates with other artists is much easier now with Dropbox and the ability to...
Internet changed. Yeah,
internet changed.
But what does it lose? You know, but you're a young kid. You're both young. But the idea that you didn't really know anything before this. I mean, but are there other artists that you've talked to who've said, you know, before we just shared beats via Dropbox, you had to work together. You had to be in the same room.
I feel like you lose depending on, it really depends on the person, because you can lose the authenticity of the relationship.
Because I think you're more in control
as
the individual. Like, it's on really you and the artist to come together. Like, we should work together, because, like, you could just...
It's less likely to be forced. Like, a lot of times, oh, I'm just going to send you some beats, bro, or here, I just want to, let's work. And it doesn't mesh, but you try to force it because it's already there.
Right.
But I feel like prior to, like, a Dropbox or, like, you know, a Google, whatever, or, you have to meet up, you have to sit and create, and if that vibe wasn't right in that room, that song wasn't coming out, you know. Now if you send it through and like you guys both don't agree on something, like it's a little different.
How do you do that? I mean, as an, why don't we start with the lyric side?
Yeah,
when you're given a beat, are you writing from scratch to that beat? Do you take the lyrics that you've already put together on a poem or something else that you've written, or lyrics just separate, and say, I'm going to make this work with the tempo and the melody that's been provided? How do you approach writing to produce music?
It depends on the beat. Typically, see, I write like 4 song ideas a day. So pretty much I always have words ready for something. It could be like a half a verse, a full verse, a full song. And if I want the, and if I, and a lot of times when I hear a beat, either I'll like, oh man, this fits that verse I wrote 8 years ago, or like 6 months ago, or a week ago, or it'll be like, okay, like this fits the idea. Maybe it wasn't a full song, but this fit the idea that I wanted to write about, and I've been waiting for a beat to write to.
Okay.
So then I hear that and go from that. Sometimes I end up piecing like 2 different verses together and like blending stuff together based upon like how I want to like actually rap over the beats. But for the most part, in my situation, I typically always have something ready. Either it's an idea, like this is the concept I want to rap about, or I have like a piece of a verse, a line or two, or something to start off with. I've never, like, only time I really have like things that are like are completely from scratch is if we make it right at the spot.
Yeah,
then I probably still have,
bring some stuff that you already have.
Yeah. This man has unlimited verses.
In studio, FemDot and DJ Chai. They of course, FemDot with the Happy October single that just came out, new music on the way, the 2020 hour tour wrapping up in DC, Philly, and New York City this weekend. Talk about how you've evolved as a stage performer. I mean, this is a big show. I mean, it's amazing to look at some of the stuff that's recorded that I've seen. I haven't seen you live, but I was looking at some stuff today. And talk about how you're evolving and when it comes to stage presence.
I don't know why they keep putting me in front of a microphone. Like, I act a complete fool. Like, I just get like, I still kind of like black out when I'm on stage, where it's kind of just me, just an instinct. And I just try to like do it what I practice at home. But at home, I try to have as much fun as possible. So that's what it is. I think throughout time, my stage presence has evolved into one of like warmth, where like people feel welcome, like into my space, like when I'm on stage, and also just that I like what I'm doing. So even if like you don't like the song, like he does, like you will. Even if you don't like what even if you don't feel what I'm saying, I feel what I'm saying, and you can pick up on that.
Right.
And
right.
I feel like that's really important, because then like you can connect with people that way, because you know that it's genuine. But that just comes from just performing more and getting more comfortable.
Well, the more and more shows you do, the more and more people are exposed to your music,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the way it goes in trying to build a career.
Yeah.
Do you spend time thinking about your stage production? Do you spend time at this stage of your career thinking about, this is how I should be on stage, this is how I should act, this is how... I mean, it's almost in a way, you talked about instinct taking over and you black out on stage. But are there parts of your act being a hip-hop artist where you're like, okay, I need to really think about how I'm going to break this song down, or I'm going to think about how this next set of my music is going to sound?
Oh, definitely. I think of the song order of how the song's going to go, like, all the time. I think of, like, okay, like, just because I black out on stage, I practice, though, you know, so it's like... In rehearsal, I'm like, man, okay, like, I need to use this side of the stage and this side of the stage. Like, okay, what if I want to, like, shout something out to the crowd? Like, okay, maybe I should do it during this song, or I should do it around this time. Or, like, okay, even, like, rapping the actual lyrics. Yeah. Okay, like, if I rap it with this cadence on the song, how can I switch that up so you can only get a different experience live? How can I, like, take shorter breaths, or especially breathing? Because when you're rapping, people underestimate the amount of breathing you have to do. Especially when you're running back and forth.
Absolutely, right.
So I have to keep that in my mind. Like, my adrenaline is going to be pumping. You know, I'm going to be breathing heavier. So how do I, you know, account for that when I'm doing these words? So, like, so I don't run out of breath on stage or I don't sound tired or exhausted. So, like, yeah, like, I run from time to time while I'm rapping all my words. Like, or, like, if I'm playing basketball or something, I'm probably rapping the words in my head or something.
Just
like,
to work on the...
Just to get the... Yeah, so yeah. It's always, like, the whole idea is a production of just, like, making sure, like, I know... Like, I make sure that it's a good show.
Well, it's interesting because there'll be some forms of music that the energy is so much more concentrated or focused. Like, I think of, like, a folk band or or even an indie rock band where they're not jumping around. Their motif is not to jump around. They're a dreamscape or something like that where they're not, you know. But in a hip-hop show and traditionally, and maybe generalizing, there is this idea that it needs to be up. It needs to be energetic.
Yeah, you gotta have the energy.
You gotta have that, right? I mean, there's. I mean, that's almost as much of how you will view or judge an artist that you don't know on stage versus even the lyrics and the music that you hear. So, how important is it for you to be energized and be ready for a show?
It's extremely important because there are people I know who I don't really like their music regularly, who I like a lot more because I've seen them live and I really liked how they did live. So now, when I hear their song, that image popped in my head. I don't hear just a song; I see the experience.
Right,
and it's the same way because, you know, I'm not big. I mean, I've headlined home, but I'm not big enough to the point where I'm out everywhere and everyone knows who I am. So I'm in these places where I have new fans, potential new fans every day. So I want them to take something away, like, yo, like, he was super energetic. Like, I really vibe with his performance. So then when they go hear me on Wax, it's like they have an attachment to it. When you're not really that energetic on stage, you don't really bring anything to it. People can still like your music.
Yeah, right.
But they won't have an attachment to it before they go look it up. Like, it's just like, oh, like, it's that sounded good. But it's not like, man, I felt that. Like, that's a completely different thing from when you bring energy.
FemDot in studio, the Chicago hip-hop artist, 22 years old, and also a DePaul University student. Wrapping up, right? Last time we were talking about these trimesters.
Yeah, man, I got one more.
One more.
Five classes away.
Five classes away. FemDot in studio, DJ Shy as well. He'll be finishing up his 2020 hour tour this weekend. Stops in New York, Philly, D.C., the mixtape, the 2020 Hour, and the new single, Happy October, and new music on the way. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll have one last live set. One song. We won't do a set. Yeah. I would like to go two more hours, but we'll do a set. One song with FemDot here in Studio 435. Stay with us.
Sounds good.
All right, Studio 435, wrapping up tonight. FemDot in studio, Chicago hip-hop artist on the end of his tour, his 2020 hour tour, which is in DC, Philly, and New York City this weekend. The 2020 hour mixtape is out. You can find it SoundCloud, other places, and also Happy October and new music on the way. So here we go, the end of Studio 435 live in studio, FemDot with DJ Shy. This track is called Shy's Interlude. Take it away, guys.
So funny, we're doing your interview on the radio, it's good. Hey, look, little nappy had to do a hair leaking out my hats now. I'm starting to pop, they might leak the raps now. Said I've been the hottest since The Rock was on SmackDown. Young people's champs, my man, don't get smacked down. You can't see me, I John Cena at the raps now. Lil dude, big show flow, boot to the back now. Kurt Angle when I rhyme, slam the raps down. Legs up like HBK when she take the yak down. My man's move came till the drought came. Now his pockets choked up, mask up to get cash now. Said I remember fourth grade dreams of Obama, with CNN propaganda, schemes of Osama. At 17, I realized that CNN was plotting. They tried to convince me that Trayvon was violent, gave Donald Trump all of the media attention. And then that surprise when they found out he was winning, y'all focused up on that broke talk. I'm trying to get a city hope talk. Put resources where they won't talk. And give my people other options than that dope talk. So if my homies try and get it off that free band tip, serving packs, cracking cars, and scamming, not saying it's right, but I understand it. Dreams of living outlandish, but you really be famished. All you ate was sleep, you had dreams of a sandwich. I remember back when Sloppy Joe was the standard. No brand name, and I couldn't even afford the man, which now I'm trying to maintain. Turn flows into Grammys.
and probably get some land for my Grammy. 23 up in the 6 LBJ in Miami. Don't tweak, still got heat if you touchin' my family. Since they know I rap and Dilla, watch the tone you speaking. See my dudes might pull up in the caravan, leave you once. Something like the last of the Mohicans, flow of OG. But I never been the one to go at, I'm the go at Ramadou. Then I be on the move like nomads, I be coolin' for real. Cause you know they try to distract you when you know what you doing for real. I'm trying to feed dude, you trying to bleed dude. You not real, you not loyal, I can't be with you. You still on cats who move like Sylvester. When things get rocky, we Apollo Creed dudes. Knock out, got bands behind me now. When I think I'm Katie, I pop out, man. That 2020 just dropped like I lost my vision. Never lost my vision. Della Creme on the way, free my homes. Yeah. I said, that 2020 just dropped like I lost my vision. Never lost my vision. Still getting rich with all my hits. Yeah. And then usually we can just fade out now. Typically, you know, we just rock hips and stuff. We can fade out now.
Oh, wait, I want to rock hips.
We can definitely rock hips here. You know what I'm saying? All hips.
All hips. All Fem hips. DJ Shy in the studio. That was Shy's interlude here in Studio 435, Rockin' the Hips.
Rockin' Hips.
The 2020 Hour is the mixtape, the new single, Happy October, new music on the way. And the tour is in D.C., Philly, and New York City this weekend. Guys, I can't thank you enough. FemDoc, great to see you again, man, and good luck pleasure, with the career. Man. And please come back again.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to do it tonight for The Download. Coming up in for Patty Vasquez tonight, Jen Bosworth and Amy Guth. Good to see you guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I got you.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm good.
Chaos. It's chaos. It's beautiful. We got tree time in here.
It's sparkly chaos.
We got good tunes. I'm about 1,000 years old because I say tunes. But anyway, it sounded great.
They're great. Yeah.
Coffin, Femda. How are you?
I'm good. Coming off a good weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, always good to get a good show in on a Monday. Always feels good.
Oh, it's Monday. That's right.
That's right.
How are you guys?
Good.
Clearly a bit sleep deprived. We're good. We are going to talk today about some of the funny day jobs that we've had. Because, like, together,
okay. Oh,
I think
gosh.
We've covered every profession there is except for heart surgeon. We haven't. Well, but the night is young.
We did that one time on the red line.
Right. What was your first job?
I was cleaning offices. So I was on an office cleaning team at like the age of 14, 15.
All right.
But the one that the bread and butter job was working at the Omni on Route 31, which was at the time the superstore for the Dominick's.
Oh.
And I've told this story before, but when all of my peers would get jobs working, you know, the more manly boxer, you know, breaking down boxes in the back, I took the math test. And became a cashier and got $1.50 extra an hour.
Right.
But it was with all the ladies. It was just me and the ladies.
Oh, that could be, you know.
It worked well to my
advantage. I was
going to
say, and were you mad about that?
No, I was not mad. Okay. I had to put
it's
up
just
with
interesting.
Like the, I had to put up with the weird judgment from
sure.
from the
sure. but then
from
you
the
were
back
like,
guys.
Also, I got ladies and more money. So.
I got ladies and more money, so
I'm winning.
I don't know
sure
what to tell
what
you.
Your problem
I don't know
is.
What to
yeah.
tell you.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
You're going to get older and realize that I'm winning
that I'm
earlier.
I'm winning
yeah,
right now, right. not you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about jobs. We're going to also talk about ways of giving gifts consciously. How about that?
Oh,
yeah, we
go.
Started that topic the other day, and
people were really
interested. So we've done
I
more research.
That.
We have more information for people.
Yeah, before we were just like, yeah, give a nice gift.
We were just sort of riffing, and now we have specific instructions.
Now
from
you've been to the library all day, right?
Right all now, day.
All day.
All day.
We're like gift concierge now.
Yeah, gift baskets.
We put it out there. We'll come up with gifts for people. So yeah, that's what we did
tonight.
All right,
we'll have a great show.